We're supposed to start in 2 minutes.
Well, usually Maureen worries about you, but she's not here, so I'm trying to do some worrying for you. All right, am I check, check, check? Am I ready to go, John?
Yeah, turn on.
It's on. See a little red light?
On. Turn on.
Check.
Can you hear? Ask Greg if he can hear you okay.
Greg, can you hear me okay? Why Greg?
Yeah, he sure can.
Okay.
Okie dokie. So everybody's getting enough to eat. I mean, I can't count for you guys. That's one of the problems with being, you got to supply your own food if you're up there. All right. Let's see. Chapter 12, Level 1 Manual. Exam on the Level 1 Manual is tomorrow, so get it all read. Exam on the Level 1 Manual is tomorrow, so make sure you get all
read. Is it written exam?
Yes. Except for the part where I have you come up here and hypnotize someone. All right. Chapter 12, page 103. Classic approaches to self-hypnosis. That encompasses every kind of self-hypnosis program or system that was ever invented, ever devised before Seventh Path. They all have some things in common. So classic approaches to self-hypnosis can be divided into two categories. First kind of self-hypnosis occurs when an individual learns how to induce a hypnotic state in herself. The second involves creating hypnosis sessions that can be played back by way of tapes, CDs, or other digital devices. How to use classical self-hypnosis. This process is very simple and can be accomplished in a number of ways. Say hypnotic induction to yourself. Gosh, that shouldn't be too hard. If you've said it over and over a few thousand times to clients, you could sit there and go, you lay down and you go, now I'm taking my attention to my eyelids, relaxing them so much that they won't work. I'm checking to make sure they won't work. Now I'm taking that feeling of relaxation at the top of my head. Now I send it like a warm wave of relax. I just go through it myself. I mean, God, that's not too hard. If you can hypnotize someone else, you can hypnotize yourself. In fact, many hypnotists believe that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So you say the induction to yourself and follow it with suggestions you wrote for yourself, typically repeating the suggestions over and over for the time that you've determined you want to spend in hypnosis. So you could do the induction, or you could take yourself down the low road, the high road, or you can just repeat and do some compounding or some direct drive. I am now a non-smoker, I'll be a non-smoker the rest of my life. You could do a really terrific job. You could do, you know, an induction, deepening. You can do direct drive technique and then go, you know, down the low road and then up the high road and all this cool stuff you can do in the magic of your own mind. Number two, have someone hypnotize you and have them give you a post-hypnotic suggestion that you can give yourself so you can take yourself back into hypnosis, then repeat a simple suggestion over and over, etc. So just like with Sip, I gave her the post-hypnotic suggestion anytime she wanted to do hypnosis with me or anyone she trusts, all they do is tug the tie and say sleep, right? Okay, well, I could have just as easily said, next time you want to go in hypnosis, all you got to do is count backwards from 10 to 1 with the intent to be in hypnosis. By the time you get to 1, it'll take you into hypnosis. Post-hypnotic suggestion. Ta-da! So now she doesn't have to read herself a suggestion or anything. She can, induction, a long one, like 2 minutes long, just count backwards from 10 to 1. Boom, go into hypnosis. Now, self-hypnosis does not require or demand deep levels of hypnosis. So we don't do all this. Pretty hard to covertly test yourself. When I'm not looking, I'm going to sneak in a covert test, right? So with any level of hypnosis is typically sufficient for self-hypnosis. The big difference between self-hypnosis, these classical forms, and doing a hetero-hypnosis, which means hypnosis with someone else, is that you would probably want to go really deeply into hypnosis when you do it with a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist, because you can't see them every day. But self-hypnosis, you can do once a day, twice a day, three times a day, whatever you want. And so you replace depth with a preponderance of repetition. And that's the trade-off. Number three, record a complete session on audio tape or CD with an induction, deepening process, suggestions in the form of either a pattern script, one-line suggestions, and so on. So, if you could do a session with somebody sitting there, you could theoretically get out a little digital recorder like I have here, or a cassette deck, put it in the chair, and just do the session to the recorder. Okay? Except you wouldn't do testing. Okay? You'd do more of a group hypnosis induction, which is in the back of the book. Maybe it's level two, I don't remember. But you just do it, and then get done, rewind the tape, or go back to the beginning of the file, sit in the chair, put the tape player over there, and hit play, and then you just do it. That encompasses just about every kind of classically put together form or another of hypnosis, self-hypnosis. Seventh path is different. And so at the bottom of 103, the seventh path self-hypnosis approach to self-hypnosis is different from the previously discussed classical approaches in several ways. One, it's a mind-body-spirit approach. Now, if you're absolutely an agnostic or atheistic individual, it will still work, but it'll be mind-body instead of mind-body and spirit. Number two, deprogramming. There is a certain period of time that is spent on removing the negative programming before we really focus on giving you suggestions for something new. This is what we call the emptying of the cup process. Number three, it's affect-based. Every other form of self-hypnosis is really based on the idea of you got patterns and we're replacing those patterns. Maybe there's some beliefs, we're trying to overcome those beliefs with a preponderance of suggestion. Seventh path comes from the position, as you will learn much more about tomorrow, that all of our problems have some level of emotional component to it. And so seventh path addresses the affect or emotional component to the problem. It will trigger and resolve emotions that have been repressed and are driving the problem behaviors, such as bad habits and addictions and so on. Number four, it's an insight therapy or insight-based process. Seventh path self-hypnosis is the very first self-hypnosis process that is also an insight therapy. It will provide insight to its practitioners, which will provide long-term change. Now, it reminds me of when I was doing my board certification. Now, when you get done with this course, you will be a CH, certified hypnotist. Or if you're in an area where you can use the word hypnotherapist, you can call yourself certified hypnotherapist by the NGH. After that, after a certain period of practice and study, you have the opportunity to become a board certified hypnotist or hypnotherapist. And that's going to consist of three things. One, a written exam. Two, you have to write an article worthy of publishing. Three, you have to go up against a board of at least a couple senior type hypnotherapists. Most of them are FNGHs or higher. FNGH is Fellow of National Guild of Hypnotists. I forgot to put my FNGH up there. I got one of them too. Okay. And then there's Diplomat of NGH. That's, you got to have even more gray in your hair. Okay. So, and then they can ask you anything about anything. Anything, really. Because it's both about your ability to do hypnotherapy. It's also about your ability to make certain ethical decisions and things like that. Get to know you as a person. They can really ask you anything about anything. They ask you, have you ever been arrested? I say, yeah, but not that many times, or I never really hurt anybody too bad. Everybody I knew had been arrested.
All your imaginations are running wild.
Board certified, then what?
Huh?
Certified, board certified, and then?
FNGH, Fellow of the National Guild, and then Diplomate of the National Guild of Hypnotism, DNGH. I recommend you strive to become a BCH, board certified. It says, hey, you went more than through just a 100-hour course, took a couple exams, you were able to, you know, write an article, pass a more stringent exam. And so I really recommend that eventually you go for BCH. By the way, our CFIs, to qualify to become a CFI, they have to take an exam that just about make your hair fall out, okay? And that it's 200 questions, and it's, boy, I talk about fine-tooth comb. It's a tough exam.
Is the article more of a thesis?
Yeah, it's just like an article to be published.
Just a regular...
Just an informational article. It's not an academic type article. You don't have to have done a thesis or a dissertation to do it. You have to write a coherent article that would be informational and useful to hypnotists. Okay, so I was going up for my board certification, and I was addressing the board, and they asked me about something. Something about what are some of the things you find most interesting in hypnotherapy. And I said, I've discovered that when you do insight-based hypnotherapy and you set up a circumstance such that an individual comes to a realization, an insight, an epiphany, that it forces the subconscious mind into a state of reorganization. And for a few short minutes, they go into a state of hyper-suggestibility like no other. And suggestions accepted in that moment become lifelong. I kind of scared them a little bit. But I still got my BCH. But I believe it's true. I believe it's true. And the success and the power of five path is based upon that. Age regression is an insight technique. You see, when you're first born, your subconscious mind is like tabla rasa.
Blank template.
Yeah. Psychologists use that to explain the unprogrammed, unlearned part of you, tabla rasa. Okay? Now, then as you begin to get bits of information, the data starts going in there, making its little marks. And then over time, you find that you do some behaviors over and over and it becomes habit. And then you build up all this information. And over a short period of time, your personality develops. And it's like soft cement when you were first born. And impressions are very easily made. But as you get older, as your life is writing things into this tablet, like a clay tablet, it solidifies. And by the time you're a teenager, it's pretty much set in stone, your personality, what you think and what you believe. And the critical factor is going to try to protect what's there. It's going to try to reject anything that's not consistent with it. It won't get into the beliefs and habits. But if you take them to an event, especially in the past, where they go, my God, what was I thinking? I was totally wrong about that. For example, let's say you regress them to they're 5 years old. And the kid's just in a playful mood, and the kid's going to think, I'm going to tell my mom, I don't like her. I love her. Well, it seemed like such a cute thing to do. And she goes, Mom, I don't like you. Mom's having a bad day. Wow, well, I wish I never would have had you either. Okay, now Mom was just having a bad day, you know. Afterward, Mom feels terrible. She didn't mean it, but she doesn't tell the kid. And the kid, Mom wishes she never had me. I'm bad. That was a stupid thing to do. Why'd I do that? What was I thinking? Something wrong with me. She doesn't love me. I'm unlovable. All this stuff out of that instant. Then I say, could be grown up. Grow up, is that true? Did your mother ever love you? Well, yeah, she loved me. Did she mean that? No, she was just having a bad day. Boy, it'd be nice if you knew that back then, huh? Yes, good. That's what we're going to do in a moment. Count from three back to one. When I get to one, we're going to be with that little 5-year-old boy before that happens. and we're going to tell him what you wish you would have known then. And then when you go back, we tell the boys, okay, this is what you're, you got this funny thought, you're going to think, I'm going to tell mom, I don't like you. Get a reaction, and then your plan is to say, I love you. But before you, I love you part, mom's having a really bad day, she's going to do something she's going to regret for the rest of her life, but we don't want you to be negatively affected by it. She's going to blurt out, I wish I had never had you, I don't care for you either, and slap you across the face. But I want you to know she didn't mean that, not at all. You're the most important thing in her life. Okay? You got it? Yes. And so we will do what's called the informed child technique. Okay? You believe in, little one? Yes, I do. Okay, here we go. One, two, three. And the kid does the same thing. The history of what happens physiologically. He still goes, Mom, I don't like you. Wham, she still hits him. But instead of thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me, she doesn't love me, he thinks, boy, mom's having a bad day. Okay? I know she really loves me. We'll make up later. Okay? I'm still lovable. You see, and that changes things. And then what happens is the subconscious mind must accept that as true. And so all the self-doubt that was built upon that throughout the child's life, that perception, something wrong with me, mom doesn't love me, maybe I'm not lovable, like a stack of dominoes, starts to fall over. You see, and so what happens is the subconscious mind, in the adult, goes soft just for a few minutes, like soft cement again. And we can now, with, for example, direct drive technique or some other form of suggestion, say, you are always lovable. There's nothing wrong with you. See? And put that in over and over. And while it re-dries in the concrete. So that suggestion can live forever. You see? And so, insight therapy. Believe it or not, 7-Path will do the same thing. But you get to do it in the privacy of your own mind. There's a number of reasons why I designed 7-Path. One of them was because there's a difference between men and women. Vive la difference, right? But one of the differences I learned about in graduate school is that women are better at seeking services than men. More women go to the doctor than men do. More women go to counseling than men do. You see, women are much better at doing communal things, about talking about it, getting help. Men, on the other hand, we're not all bad. We're better at something else. When we have a problem, like a woman has a problem, we are much better at being successful at suicide on the first try. Man, I tell you, women, 2, 3, 4 times, they still ain't got it right. Man, we find a way that's going to work the first time. Okay, I'm ready. You see, our brains are different. Men's brains and women's brains are different. Women's brains are set up to talk about it. Women's brains are set up to be more communal, much with a higher probability to want to work with someone to get help. Men, we're designed to compete and to feel weak and endangered if we start talking about our problems. Now, of course, some of us are better at it than others, and what I'm talking about is in generalities, but the statistics will hold it up. And so I found out that 70, 80, maybe even higher, percent of my clients are women. But you know what? There's just as many, if not more, men that need the service. So I wanted to provide a system that men could use to get the benefits a 5-Path, but to do it in the privacy of their own mind. Because literally, ladies and gentlemen, there's men out there that'd rather blow their brains out than talk about an embarrassing time when they were 5 years old in kindergarten or first grade and they pooped their pants. I'm sorry, that's the way our brains are wired. Because we feel very much in danger if we start talking about our weaknesses. Now, of course, again, I'm talking in generalities. So 7-Path was designed to do what 5-Path will do. It tends to be slower. It tends to be gentler than 5-Path. 5-Path is like the bulldozer. It comes in and it's going to grab that big chunks of that crapola and throw it out of your life. Seven path is more like the shovel and the broom. Now, one of the very best things you'll learn to do is to use them both together. Because those people who do come for hypnotherapy services, they'll get 5-path, but we will teach them 7-path. Because every good construction crew has both the bulldozer, the shovel, and the broom. Okay? And so in between sessions, our clients do 7-path. And then when they come to see us, we do 5-path. Any questions?
You teach it as a standalone?
You can do 7-path standalone. We can all have clients come in and say, I want you to teach me 7-path. And then every week I'll teach them some more. Or they'll come in for classes. We can teach it as a group. Or as we do 5-path with someone, we'll spend a few minutes in each session to teach them how to do 7-path. Very flexible. There's a number of weaknesses with 5-path. 5-path, weakness, one-on-one. 7-path, theoretically, I could do a baseball stadium all at once. All I need is a microphone and as many ears as I can hear. Because my role as someone who's doing 7-path is teacher. If they can hear me, they can learn 7-path. But my role as 5-path, there is more like a therapist, coach, that kind of thing. So it's one-on-one. Another weakness of 5-path is it requires level 4 or deeper. So I can't do groups. In groups, you cannot guarantee any depth of hypnosis. 7-path requires only level 1. Even if you're unsuccessful at getting hypnosis on your first try, 7-path, the technique is trance-inducing and will eventually create the hypnosis itself, even if they didn't get it in your office. So it's superior in that way. And then as you begin to learn 7-path, you will find out that it goes far beyond anything that we can do at 5-path. So it's an insight-based therapy. With regular classical self-hypnosis, you tend to have to reinforce it over and over, and it'll start to fade away, and then you have to start doing it. But because 7-path is insight-based, the suggestions that you receive can become permanent. Any questions about that? You should have tons. I'm not going to answer them. Tomorrow I'm going to start answering them. Tomorrow you're going to start learning 7-path. Yesterday I made up a new handout. I drive my people crazy because I'm always making up new handouts. But the other day I was teaching a CFI. What I'm about to teach, I was reviewing it so that they knew how to do it in class. And they had seen it in class. Then I'd gone over it in their CFI training. And then I said, now do it on the board. And they did something that looked nothing like what I taught. So I said, okay, I need to type it out. And so yesterday I typed it out. There's a typo in there. Please forgive me. It's hot off the presses. It just got printed out. And so we're going to, the first time, a new handout. And we'll see what happens. Thank God. It's weird. I like typing. It's just fun. It's something I always wanted to do, but anyway, it's in your file. It's called 5-7-path comparison.
I did all. Pass them back. Here's for you.
Got it.
John is skillfully and diligently emailing that out to our off-site people.
Go, John.
Without typos.
Oh, if it's got typos, anyway. I'm about to do it on the board.
Let's all say hi to the people online. Hello.
All right.
Wake up, Nancy.
I gave Nancy the rest of the day off.
Ah, okay.
I think I gave Celeste. Did Celeste go away too, or is she still here? All right, let's get an understanding of 5-half. Versus 7-half. Self hypnosis.
Yeah. I should probably have this opposite if I do it about the same way.
Begin with the goal in mind. Know what you're doing. Believe me, there's tons of hypnotists out there who have no idea what they're doing. They're playing it by the seat of their pants. 5-phase advanced transformational hypnosis. So there's 5 phases. Let's see. I need someone who's good at guessing. Kim, you're good at guessing?
Yes.
How many sessions are there in 5-phase?
5.
Wrong.
Wow.
I set you up for that. How many?
6.
More than 5?
Who said 6? You're wrong, too.
10.
Possibly.
Depends on the client. 4 to 6.
The question doesn't make any sense.
All right.
Because 5-phase. How many sessions does it take to get phase 1 done?
Oh, well,
depends on your skill, your ability, and your client's ability to respond. Okay? Depends on their suggestibility. It depends on a lot of stuff. So I'm kind of making a real special case out of this because once in a while I get a dingbat that graduates a class and calls it 5-session hypnosis. It's not. Now, guess what? It just so happens that probably if you average it out, it probably works out to about 5. But that's just on average, and that's if you're good. When you're new, it's going to take more. And you get better and better, it might take less. And just when you think you're doing really good because you're doing 5-half and you're averaging 4 sessions, someone comes along and takes 27 sessions. Okay? So there's 5 phases, not 5 sessions. So we got phase 1. Now, I'm very purposeful in what I'm doing here. I'm using Roman numerals here. When I use Roman numerals, you should use Roman numerals. When I use Arabic numerals, use Arabic numerals. When I use, you know, alphabet type stuff, letters, use them because they're all assigned to a different part of what we do. Okay, phase 1, preparation, testing, and convincing phase. All the stuff we do to prepare from the session, from first contact, pre-talk, pre-hypnosis interview, okay, then the actual induction, and then the testing and convincing. All sessions of every phase are ended with direct suggestion, DS. Now, there's certain acronyms and little alphabet things that we do that it belong to 5-path. It's our jargon. We got FOO, we got FOSS, we got ICT and all this stuff. And it came out of the fact that we do so much stuff online, and you know, that you just start abbreviating stuff. And so PTC is preparation, testing, and convincing. It ends with DS, which is direct suggestion. So you got your client comes in, you've scheduled an hour and 15 minutes. You show them the pre-talk, you do the pre-hypnosis interview, and what you find out what they want. And you say, would you like to hypnosis with me now? And they say, yes. Okay, you got to touch your hand, your arm, your shoulder, maybe even your forehead. Yes, good, take a nice deep breath. Blah, 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 blah. And we go all the way through the preparation, testing, and convincing. I walk. Next time we do hypnosis together, all we do is drop your hand and say the word sleep. So we got that in there. And now we look at the clock. Wherever the clock is, right? We ask ourselves a question. Do I have enough time to move on to phase 2? Phase 2 is age regression. Guess what? If you don't have a half hour left at that point, you don't have time to start an age regression session. Because it just takes time to go back and do all the stuff we're going to do. So if you have less than a half hour, you're going to wrap up with direct suggestion. So you might do high road, low road. You might do the premature ejaculation script, whatever it is that person's in for. Then you will emerge them, and typically you'll do time distortion, red, red, red. They open their eyes, going, you do feel good, don't you? You know, all that stuff. and you go up and you confirm their appointment for next week. Let's see. Goals. The goal of that session. See, one of the things that I think is really powerful about BiPath is it's criteria-based. That means you know that you when you move on to the next step because you've fulfilled a certain criteria. And the criteria is, guess what? You don't do the testing until you do the preparation. You don't do the convincing until you've done the covert testing. You don't do the direct suggestion until you know they're in hypnosis. See, everything makes sense here. So once we have some general goals that we want to do, we want to have a hopeful, somnambulistic client. Why? Remember I talked about earlier, I said you take some doctors, you take their patients, you divide them into two groups. There's the depressed, hopeless over here, and then there's the optimistic and basically emotionally in good condition people over here, and who's going to do better with the treatment? You notice I didn't even say what the treatment was, but generally these hopeful people are going to do better. That's important because almost every client that comes in to see you is not very hopeful. Why? Because everything has failed. In fact, they think they're kind of crazy. What am I doing going to go see the hypnotist? I hope my brother-in-law never finds out about it. He's going to think I'm nuts. You see? So almost every client that you will see is depressed with regard to the issue that they're coming in to see you about. Now, I don't mean clinically depressed, major depressed, although we can work on that. Okay? But I mean, they're depressed about this idea of them not being able to stop smoking or stop drinking or stop gambling or to start exercising. This one, oh God, what's wrong with me? I guess I'll try the hypnotist. I've tried everything else. So we got to take them out of that state into a hopeful state. Why? Because just about every treatment on the face of the earth works better if they're in a hopeful state. So how do we do that? Convincers. And by looking professional. Okay? And, you know, being who you promised to be. Your the name of your office represents the office they find. Because, you know, doing the things I've been talking about. Then we do the induction to covert test for somnambulism. Why do we want somnambulism at least level 4? Well, because the deeper the better. Why? Because we don't really go deeper, we become more suggestible. And before we do any kind of work at all, we want them to be as suggestible as we can get at that moment because that's our business. We're in the suggestibility business. Right? Okay. Now, when we get them into that situation, somnambulism, then we've created the environment in our client's mind such that they are deep enough to hallucinate with their eyes closed. There's two major kinds of hallucination. There's positive and negative. Positive means you add something. It's like plus. Positive hallucination means you add something. They see something that's not there, or they hear or taste or smell something that's not physically there to cause it. Negative hallucination, that means subtract negative. We subtract something from what they would normally be able to perceive. All of a sudden, now they can't see this, or they can't smell this, or they can't taste this. And those at level 5 and 6, stage 5 and 6, full somnambulism, profound somnambulism, they're able to exhibit that with their eyes open. But at stage 4, you can do it with your eyes closed. Remember, Sib, she's able to describe that thing, okay, with her eyes closed. But when she opened her eyes, it went away. So, what I have discovered is at stage 4 somnambulism, threshold of somnambulism, they're able to hallucinate with their eyes closed. And guess what? Almost all of my sessions, the client's eyes are closed. So that's all I need to do an age regression because an age regression is a hallucination. They relive. They hallucinate being 5 or 4 or 3 or 2 or 1 or 6 months or whatever it is. An age regression is a hallucination, a reliving They're back there at 5 years old riding their bicycle. Guess what? No bicycle. That's a hallucination. They open their eyes. If they're not level 5, the bicycle disappears. If they're in level 5, they can actually experience the entire reliving of the event with their eyes open. But that's too weird. I've had that happen. Their eyes are open, and they're riding their bike. Close your eyes, man. That's too weird.
Yeah.
That's got to be pretty weird. I have them close their eyes and be there in their mind. Okay, so that's why we have level 1, all that stuff, because we must have this, and we want this in order to do this. AR, age regression. So I look at the clock. Oh, gee, I still got 45 minutes. I'll move into the age regression. Got 20 minutes, wrap it up with direct suggestion in phase 1. So, you do not have to wait for a second session to do AR. This is one of the things I like about doing double sessions when I can. Because I can get right into this really good stuff in my first meeting with the client. I'll always have time for AR.
Excuse me, in your book on hypnosis, hypnotherapy, I think you made a statement in regards to not wanting to really do AR in the first session.
That's right.
So, you really consider this a second session, this phase 2?
Well, what that was how I felt in 2001.
Oh, okay.
I've learned a few. Well, that's it. You know.
He's got better.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
What I believe that I'm talking to, when I was doing that, I was talking to people that are, a lot of those ideas are brand new. And when you're a beginner, guess what happens? You do, back then I was saying, spend the first session on direct suggestion, do the preparation, testing, and convincing. But then I found out that once you get really good at this, you might have enough time left over to go into the AR. And then I started thinking in terms of phases instead of sessions. So nowadays we'd say, spend the first phase by not doing AR. But guess what? It's like, okay, let's say you did the stuff you planned to do in day 1, but you still got half the day left. Start doing day 2 stuff.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Because back then, you see, I would watch the work of Jerry Kine, I'd read and listen to the work of Dave Elman and Gil Boyne, and they did something to me. They made me feel stupid. Because the overall message was, if I didn't have everybody I met in somnambulism, in about 2 minutes, and doing an age regression, and have it all wrapped up, in about 25 to 30 minutes, there was something wrong with me. And you know what I figured out? It's a dance. There's two variables here. I can be as slick and as good as I want, and I'm not going to be able to do that with everybody. But I need to be successful with everybody. And I was seeing a lot of clients. I mean, I was seeing 5 clients a day, on average 5 days a week. That's a lot of clients. And I had to be successful all the time. I wasn't the guy that was going from hotel room to hotel room where I could give you a guarantee. Guarantee you'll stop smoking or quit drinking or whatever it is. Guarantee. And then they disappear after they do the session. You never see them for a year. And they come back, they say, well, yeah, the guarantee is you can go through the session again. You can have more of what doesn't work. Okay. So I had to have something that worked every time. And so I started studying, for example, who's the fellow you studied under that you mentioned earlier?
Art Winkler.
Art Winkler, for example. And he really started pressing convincers and talking about that. And I said, oh, that's really interesting. And other people. And I said, you know what, I'm going to do a preparatory phase where I make sure I've got somnambulism, I'm not going to pressure myself to anyone. And back then, that was my first session. And then the second session, I got into age regression. But then, you get pretty good at it after one and say, hey, you know what, sometimes I can get that done and go right into phase 2.
Well, as a client who's gone through the 5 path with a hypnotherapist, I think that if we had done age regression on the first date, I might not have gone back, just because it was such a powerful thing that when I look back at it now, I appreciate having that whole first session to kind of get my feet wet, because the age regression was extremely powerful.
Okay. And that was my attitude in 2000 when I wrote that book. I said, you know, give them a positive experience, they'll want to come back. Next session, they come in, they're expecting that same session over again. They go, you're hypnotized, and they drop like a rock. And then you lay it on. But what I learned was, if I do a really good job of the age regression, they're going to feel 10 times better than I would have done with the first session. They're going to experience such a relief, such a transformation, that if I can do it, I ought to just do that too. But again, unless I think I have time to do that, I won't go there. I will just do phase one.
Okay. I was just doing an extra session to get an extra fee.
Well,
not really.
I think your thinking makes sense, but your modern thinking is that modern times things have changed. I've changed, people have changed. We now can do this. We now know we can do this. We don't have the experience of having.
Yep. You know, when you do this kind of stuff, you have to be conservative.
Yep.
And based on it, you think, what's the best for everybody if I have to make a generalization, if I have to make a rule of thumb, and you do it. And that's what I believe. Now, I say the same thing, except let's say, instead of thinking in terms of sessions, let's start thinking in terms of phases. You see? And that book wasn't really a five-path book. It was mainly a direct suggestion age regression book. Okay.
That's true.
So now I get AR. AR, age regression, is there to remove erroneous emotions and beliefs. We always wrap up with direct suggestion. So we have erroneous beliefs and emo. Okay? And so what do? We typically say that's erroneous beliefs and emo. It's on the handout, I think.
What is the AP?
Age progression. I haven't got that yet. When we get the client, we're ready to do the age regression, we say there's a feeling inside you don't like that has everything to do with why you came here today, and as I count from 1 to 5, it comes up as strong as powerful as ever been. 1, coming up, 2, stronger and stronger, 3, 4, 5, there it is, strong and powerful as ever been. It's connected every time in your life you've ever been felt that way. As I count from 5 back to 1, you go back to an earlier time you felt that way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then we're going to ask the fabulous 5 questions, and I'll get into all this stuff later. I know you don't know what I'm talking about, but it'll make sense later. Okay? And then we're going to keep following that feeling back until it's new. And then we're going to do a number of different things to make sure we're at the very first event they felt that way. And then we're going to find out what they're thinking. And whether or not that thought is based on an accurate perception, given everything that my client as an adult knows about the world and me. Together, we put our heads together and go, was that accurate? Did mom really not love that child when she slapped him across the face and said, I never wished I ever had you? Is that accurate? If it's not, we need to tell the little child. You see? Because he's got erroneous beliefs. What he believed from that situation was wrong. And so the emotions that are being generated from him are totally erroneous. But that's why he's drinking, or he's smoking, or whatever it is. Because he's got that feeling inside he doesn't like, and certain situations makes him feel that way, so he goes into some kind of distracting strategy. So for us to get rid of what's driving that behavior, we need to go ahead and neutralize the emotion. Now there is a chance that, yes, mother didn't love you, and she wished she had never had you. And when we get to the age regression, I'll tell you exactly how to handle that. See, we deal with reality as we can best understand it to be, given the knowledge of the adult client and myself. Okay? And believe me, if mom doesn't love that child and wishes she never would have had him, and believe me, that happens from time to time, then that child needs to know it. And we need to, if those feelings that are being generated by that perception are accurate, then what we need to do is validate them. And we'll get into how to do that exactly. Okay. But our main goal of age regression is to find any erroneous beliefs and neutralize them along with the emotions that are being driven by them. Remember, we have perceptions, then we have thoughts in the conscious mind, and then we have emotions generated in the subconscious mind, and then we have feelings generated by the unconscious mind. So we're building on yesterday's model of the mind here. All right. Age regression is usually about fear. That's usually the emotion we deal with, fear. For example, if the child believes, mother doesn't love me, she wishes she never had me, well, how might that make the child feel? Fearful, because who is the child most dependent upon? The younger back we go, the more directly dependent the child becomes on mother. Right? And if the child perceives that the relationship isn't good, she doesn't care enough, and maybe the child won't get what the child needs. Maybe the child will even die in their thoughts. Oh my goodness, what happened? Maybe she'll leave me. Who's going to feed me? Who's going to clothe me? So it's fear. And we will, what we can do, for example, in the mother that says, I never loved you. I wish I'd never had you. Then I can say, grown up, did she ever leave? Well, no, she was always there, but she was never loving. Oh. So the fear in the child that she was going to leave is not based in reality. Wouldn't it be nice if you knew then what you know now? First of all, she doesn't love you, but she's not going to leave. You're still going to be safe. I mean, if that's true. Then we tell the child that, and what do? We get rid of erroneously based fear. We'll get into that in more detail. Okay. Now, I want you to notice how having somnambulism was required for the AR. So, the reason this comes before this is it increases the probability of a successful age regression session. Phase three, which is forgiveness of others. Foo, would you call me? Foo, forgiveness of others, okay, occurs next because we want to get rid of anger. Okay, righteous anger or anger that was put together erroneously. Anger. So. Why do we have forgiveness of others after the age regression? Because it's during the age regression we get to find out who the individual might need to forgive. Who treated them wrong? Who instilled the problem in the individual? Some people say, oh, I know my client's problems is that they're angry, so I'm going to do forgiveness therapy. Well, I'm sorry, that's some premature forgiveness therapy elation, okay? You know, you can get in there too quickly. You haven't done the part where you can do it in an informed manner. You don't know who the players are, so to speak. So, it's only after we've done a good age regression do we know the history of the problem. Okay? All the stuff, the events in their life that are relevant, and who the people are. So that's why AR goes before Foo. Phase four comes after Foo, and that's called FOS. Forgiveness of self. Only after you've done a pretty good job of forgiving everybody else are you really able to do a 100% good job of forgiving yourself. Okay. Why is that? Because if you're still angering at people, you're still doing the stuff that needs to be forgiven. So if you forgive yourself right now, in the next breath, as soon as you get angry at them again, yeah, then you're still needed, you're back in that situation of needing to be forgiven. So you forgive them. And as you watch and as you do this work, you'll find that it's natural. After you've done the forgiveness of the other people, there's going to be this yearning. Now I need to forgive me. Plus, there's this thing that I'm going to get into in a great more detail in the days ahead called locus of control. It's one of the most difficult things to work with people because it's very personality-oriented. And that is, where do you see your locus of control? Internal or external locus of control? And once a lot of people are going, my life would be better if my mother loved me and if my husband wasn't such a son of a bitch and if my kids weren't, and they're like this all the time. And you don't have any control over them. But when we've done a really good job of the forgiveness work, then we're no longer doing my problem is there and there and there, and what's left, okay, is the clarity of what's left that was your responsibility. And then you can do the self-forgiveness in that light.
A very quick question between any of these, AR, Fool, and FOST, is there a certain period of time in terms of days that this needs to be working? So, and because of internalization?
Yeah, soak-in period, so to speak. A minimum of a day off. That's like when someone flies in, and I've got, like, they can't stay for 6 weeks, I'll do a double on Monday, a double on Wednesday, a double on Friday, or a double on Tuesday, double on Thursday, and a double on the next Tuesday. Because they need the time for it to kind of process.
And the furthest apart, 2 weeks maybe?
Generally, I say optimum is 5 to 10 days apart. 2 weeks starts to stretch it, but sometimes you have to. You start losing ground after 2 weeks. You find out you have to redo some stuff, and it's just not good. 3 to 10 days, 5 to 10 days, in that kind of range. But I can get away with a day. I need at least a day. If I did a double, believe me, by the time I get to the third day, they got no energy to do the work. Because this is hard work. This is actually hard work for the therapist. It's hard work for the client, and that's one reason why people who are psychotherapists and counselors will start doing the other stuff, because that's easier. Because this is hard. Okay. All right. Unless you've done, I don't know, a couple, do 1,000 sessions, and it's pretty easier. And then they wake up, oh, God, it was so... And you go, yeah, it was harder on you than it was me, because it's... Actually, now for me, it's a lot of fun. It's not hard at all. To me, I'm like playing them like a musical instrument. I know it's so second nature. Yes?
I would say that that's a matter of perspective, because to me, it's hard to go, okay, I've already tried this, this, and this. Now what am I going to do?
That's frustration.
And frustration's hard for me.
Yeah, it can be difficult to be so frustrated. But the actual doing the work can be very sad. It's like the old Peace Corps commercial, the hardest work you'll ever love. You know, I think Peace Corps commercial was like that. It's a lot of work, but it's satisfying. It is the most satisfying thing I've ever done. Yes?
Listen, you do the phase one and two in one session. Just kind of stop, or...
I just usually, unless they have to pee or something.
No, you do it.
Has grow right through.
So
because it just takes up too much time to emerge them, talk about it, and then prepare them to go in again. That's another reason why I like doing doubles. I can usually get 2.5 times as much done in a double than I'll get in a single. The age regression is usually sufficient. Well, I will still do the eye lock convincer, because I want to know they're hypnotized. Then I'll go into the age regression. But I will bypass the time distortion. I may give them the red, red, red still, because it reinforces all the insights of that. Okay.
Do you ask people, would you like to continue hypnosis today with me? I mean, you said unless they have to pee or something, do people tell you that? Or
sometimes if they ask, you know, are we going to stop? And then go, I said, what I'd like you to do is just let me determine that. If it looks like... you benefit from a break, I'll take a break. But otherwise, usually we get more done if I just keep rolling through. So if you can handle that, that's what I'm going to do. You know, once I get in the age regression, I don't want to give them any reason to bail on me. I mean, most of the people I do age regression with, they cry, and they, you know, it's a really hard time. Yeah. Snot running down there. They blow bubbles in the snot, you know. They start doing that, and I give them a tissue. And I say, because I'm not going to wipe snot, you know. And so I say, nurses could do that kind of stuff. Nurses are impervious to anything. They'll wipe poop and snot. But I'll just get put a tissue in their hand and say, you can use this, it won't interfere at all. Let them wipe their snot.
Contact them.
Yeah, if they, I would probably say, your contact has come out. Do you need to take care of that, or can I just set it aside or something?
I captured it in a cap of water.
Yeah. You know. Okay. Forgiveness of self. That is about neutralizing anger itself. And guilt. Now, there's a couple of reasons. People say, you know, this person has a phobia. Why are we worrying about this? Why don't we just do the age regression for the phobia? Because someone did that to them. There's someone that caused them to have that problem. We need to neutralize that. And then what? So that's then in the food. And then they say, well, yeah, but now why? I've got to understand that. Why in the world would we do forgiveness of self? Because I got a phobia? Yeah, because it's going to come apparent to them that someone did that to them. And they forgive them, and then they're going to realize that they had some responsibility because they, yeah, sure, someone startled them when they were 3, but they held on to the fear for 47 years. They need to forgive themselves for that, you see? And so it goes through the whole thing. And another thing is, these are insight processes. Every time we give them the epiphany, the insight, they go into that hyper-suggestible state. And we can make the suggestions that they want that can last forever. And so we want to continue to do those, even though on the surface it appears that some people might not need it. Okay. So, we don't want to do forgiveness of self until we've forgiven the other people because they're still angering and still need forgiveness. Then there's phase 5. Phase 5 is interesting development. And that one of the, a real challenging thing for therapists of all time and doctors is a thing called secondary gain. Secondary gain means there's a cause to the problem that's different from the initial cause of the problem. And because there's a secondary cause to the problem, taking care of what caused it in the beginning isn't going to cause the problem to go away. So, in other words, they benefit in some way by having the problem. Some benefit, some gain that's secondary to whatever caused it. So, for example, someone might be in an accident, hurt their back. Now, up until that day, you know, they had this job. It was an okay job. It wasn't their favorite job. In fact, sometimes they wish they didn't have that job. Kind of the most boring, stinkingest job in the world. And then they had this accident. Now they don't have to go to work anymore. They're not rich, but they get that little check every month. People don't expect them to take out the garbage or to do yard work anymore. You see, it's not all bad. Then either through a medical, psychological, or hypnotic, whatever intervention, we go in and remove the cause of the pain. Now, Joe's got to go back to work. He's got to start taking out the trash, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And his subconscious mind says, you know, should be nice to have that pain back. And not through malingering, meaning faking it, but through the actual actions of the subconscious mind, it can regenerate the pain because it feels like it's in your best interest. So there's an example of secondary gain. The doctor will look and say, the surgery was, excuse me, the doctor will say, the surgery was a perfect success. Everything's lined up. There should be no pain. But after 2-3 months, the pain comes back. The lady has the bad hip. She gets the surgery, everything went fine. Now her hip works really good. But you know what? When she had the bad hip, Her son would come over every Thursday and take out the garbage. Have dinner with Mom. Now her hip works. He doesn't come around so often. Oh, it's starting to come back. And she's not faking it. It's really coming back. There's other kinds of secondary gain. For example, let's say the pot smoker. All of his friends smoke pot. He's not really that social unless he's a little bit high. So now, what does he do? He stops smoking pot, and he's got no friends. After a while, he'll go back to smoking pot because of the secondary gain of what? Social activity. Okay. So you need to work with the individual so that they can start fulfilling their needs, wants, and desires in a different way. So how do we do that? A special process called parts mediation therapy. And what does it do? It gets rid of secondary gain. We're going to talk all about that stuff. Basically, it is mediation, but instead of between two parties, it's done intrapsychically with the two parts of you, the part that wants to change and the part that doesn't want to change. And it will provide them through normal mediation. I mean, you could just about go get a book on mediation. That's what I did. I was actually certified as a mediation person a long time ago. And I discovered, and I'll talk more about it when we get there, that there's a therapeutic benefit in mediation. And if we hypnotize someone and psychically divide them into two people, then the part that wants to change and the part that wants to stay the same, what can we do? Then we can run normal mediation process between the two and get a win-win situation, then meld them back together. Then we can neutralize secondary gain issues.
Does that show up often?
It depends on you, on who you're working with. Hold on a second. This deals with primary gain. This deals with secondary gain. And so what that means is, depending on your populations that you work with, a lot of times you may not do phase five. At our centers, we work with normal everyday people with normal everyday problems. Most of them have jobs, go to school, that kind of stuff. And we don't deal with secondary gain that much. Secondary gain is almost always there. But is it significantly strong enough to drive the problem? Okay. In the population we work with, most of the time, it's not strong enough to cause the problem to resurface. But some of you may work with people where this happens all the time. Medical environments. That was an example, right? Working with pain. Secondary gain is often an issue. Another situation is conduct disordered children. Secondary gain. Because they're able to manipulate their families by doing these behaviors. Another situation where we run into it, let me see, there's something else I had in mind. It's pain, children, well really just about any time where they lose something that's significant, like the pot smoker, where they lose a social interaction kind of thing. But if you're now I knew what it was. If you are a social worker, counselor, that kind of thing, where you're working with populations that get a great deal of support, social security income, where their identity comes from being part of a group, even though it's not the healthiest group, it's their social group, then getting well, they lose something. And so that's the secondary gain issue. So social workers, people who work with institutionalized people, or people who get a lot of social support for their problem, deal with secondary gain almost routinely. So, that's why it's five path. One day, I was thinking, gosh, I'm doing a good job. My therapists are doing such a good job. But I'm always trying to think about how I could do better. And it dawned on me, give a person a fish, feed them for a day, teach them how to fish, feed them for a lifetime. And to some degree, I'm giving them a fish. They come in for their one little problem, and then we fix it. And they come in for their next little problem, and we fix it, and so on. And I thought, how can I turn this into a teach them how to fish process? Well, one thing I did was wrote The Secret Language of Feeling so they could start educating and learning how to use these ideas in their whole life. But the other thing was, gosh, maybe I should teach them just regular old self-hypnosis. Okay? So we almost had a phase six, and that is classical self-hypnosis. But that didn't work out. Because as I was developing that, I was inspired to develop seventh path, which was something that was a whole hierarchy, a whole leap ahead of that. So we almost had a seventh one, which is seventh path. But I discovered that it was usable independent of five path. And so it didn't make sense for it to be a phase. So instead it got its own name, was not included in the five-path process, and became the star unto itself, and became, here we go. That's not very good, but you get the idea. Seven-path, right? So that was the evolution that occurred. Now, seven-path is interesting, because we have these things that are called recognitions. Recognitions is the name that we give the hypnotic suggestions that are used in the seventh path process. To recognize something is to have an insight. Aha! Aha! Now I know. That's why they're called, I could have called them the ahas. Recognition seems to be right. Insights was already taken by the Celestine prophecy. Okay? So we went with recognition. Okay? And so there are nine recognitions that go to the seventh path process, not seven. There's nine. Now, they, like I said, they do what five path do and more. The first five recognitions are called the basic recognitions, and they will do what five path does and more. In the seven path process, it is mind, body, spirit. And so there are a mind, body, soul type process. And so we deal with a higher power, whatever or whoever you perceive that power to be. And it's variable amongst different people. And I chose the variable delta. Because of my training in mathematics, however humble it is, I discovered that delta was used in mathematics and the sciences to represent
change,
right? Like in calculus, the d of f equals the change in amplitude across the function. Okay. See, and I thought I wasted my money in that one. Yeah. So I thought, okay, what I'm trying to do is create change, and so we have delta, and we just draw a triangle. It's the Greek letter delta. I also took Greek. It's funny because in high school I failed Spanish. In junior college I took Mandarin, almost died. So then in my last year of undergraduate work I thought, I'll take ancient Greek. Yeah, oh boy, that was tough. But I do remember that's delta. I do understand some of the root Greek words in the English, like anthropos. Never. Anyway, so we got this delta, and it means change. And I kind of got this idea that what I'm trying to do, is create, a place where they're better off than they were before. So, it's a move upward. The point's upward, too. And so we got delta. Delta represents your higher power, whatever you perceive it to be. And we'll get into that in more detail tomorrow. Delta. And it just so happened, as a shortcut, we started calling the recognitions So as we say, recognition number one, recognition number two, recognition number three. Well, I don't know how it happened, but somehow we started calling them Delta 1, Delta 2, Delta 3 also, which is kind of a nice little abbreviation when you're writing. So we have Delta 1. Delta 1 does what Phase 1 does, both in the short and full forms. Doesn't that look scientific?
San Francisco.
Delta 1, short and full forms, does what Phase 1 does. AR, the same thing is accomplished with Delta 2 in the short and full form, and Delta 3 in the short and full forms. Delta 4, in the short form, does what Phase 3 does. Delta 4 in the full form does what this does. Delta 5 in the short and full forms will take care of this and do much more so that everyone can benefit from it. You don't have to have secondary gain. Those are the basics. 6 through 9 in the short and full forms transcend your personal little problem that brought you in. And it has to do with expanding your consciousness, seeing all of life from a higher perspective. Everyone should aspire to get all of the recognitions. You will learn all of those in this class. Doing so is downright ridiculous, because it's far more than you'll ever comprehend in the days ahead. But it's going to be like installing the software over the next few weeks and months. If you choose to practice it, you'll get all the insights, all the epiphanies that you need. But in this class, I've got to turn you into 7th path teachers and give you these recognitions. Don't ever do it to anybody else, because it's the worst possible thing you could do to 7th path. But I just don't have any other choice but to give them all to you in this period of time. There's more, but it cannot be squeezed into this class. And that is, after you get the short and full forms, there's also the ultimate forms. SFU, 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 SFU. SFU. There is a short, full, and ultimate form for all these recognitions. The first recognition is only 4 words long. But you're going to be surprised how difficult it is to memorize those 4 words or 5 words. When we go to the full form, there's just a few more words we add to it, which adds depth and breadth of meaning and intensity. It becomes much more intense. That's why there's a short form and a full form. Not everybody could withstand the power and the emotional intensity of these recognitions in their full forms. In the ultimate form, the recognition can run as long as 55 words long, which is a lot to memorize. And there are some techniques that go with it that make it very powerful. And you are not ready to do them, to receive those recognitions, that ultimate form, until you've spent a number of weeks, at least, processing and utilizing the short and full forms. So the ultimate recognitions and becoming teachers of the ultimate recognitions do not occur until a later class. Okay? And you're going to be amazed at what that does. Then, after the recognitions will come the aspirations and the illuminations, which are 2 additional sets that are not available yet to anyone, including me. Good. So that's the overview. Take a break. Take 10.
Oh. So this is a lifelong, this can really be a lifelong process.
It's still being revealed to me.
Good.
It's an inspired word.
But I understand. A little bit. A little bit.
This is reading this thing a little.
Well, I'm not a smart at all.
This woman, like,
that's what a lot of healers do. Yep, and that's going to be fun. We'll get into that. We'll spend probably an hour and a half, 2 hours on that kind of stuff.
My brain is just exploding right now.
It's kind of exciting, isn't it?
And confusing.
You're supposed to feel a bit confused right now, and I'm going to be spending over the next, you know, few days doing in the
books. Yeah.
Mikkel, when you talk about neutralizing your anger at this stage and forgiving others, are you also allowing for whatever the primary feelings might be? They're like hurt. That might be underneath the anger.
What feeling is hurt?
What feeling is hurt?
Hurt is like, I feel bad. Hurt is like just a general, I'm not comfortable, I'm feeling bad after this happened.
Right.
So it does, it's kind of meaningless. It's just like saying, I feel bad.
Right.
It's too general to be useful.
Even though there might be some more complete healing around the incident?
Not until you find out what they were thinking.
So if you... Okay. So the intention of the child in saying, Mom, I don't like you, I love you, but never being able to say I love you and getting slapped, he was thinking was...
Are you talking about physical hurt or emotional hurt?
Emotional hurt.
Yeah. So what was the perception that led to that hurt?
Mom doesn't love me.
So what is that creating fear or anger? Or something else?
Fear.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my point. Once we know that what it is, then we can challenge the belief that's generating the emotion.
That is so bizarre. Okay.
So we have to know the concept. We're always going to be working cognitive, emotive, cognitive, emotive.
Okay.
Emotion, thought, always back and forth.
Is there a possibility that secondary gain, the need to stay kind of in that victimhood, stems from a lingering sense of hurt around a given perception?
That's paradoxical. Okay. Secondary gain means there's some benefit in it now. Lingering hurt means primary gain. It's lingering from the cause.
Okay.
So they're not. Secondary gain means by behaving in such a way that they're behaving by being hurt. Something or some gain in it. Where the actual being hurt, you're still holding onto it. That stems back to
primary. That's what the army's like, building you up.
That makes you think.
It does. It makes me think a lot because as we were taught at school, that anger is a secondary emotion. There's a primary emotion underneath that, which is fear or hurt or shame.
Nope. Because our society is so... Okay, tomorrow I'm going to be going into this in great detail.
Okay.
See if it doesn't clear it up. If you find error in my thinking, point it out to me.
Yeah.
So I have a chance to either be clearer or shift my view.
Okay.
But this is the deal. People perceive a certain thing. They give meaning to it. That meaning will then cause an emotion. Then they will feel good or bad. But there's lots of different ways to feel bad. Anger, sad, lonely, fearful. Okay. And fear always comes from the perception of not fair. It's not fair that she hit me. I was just kidding. Or fear. Uh-oh, she doesn't love me. I'm in danger of getting my needs
not met. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's one or the other, or both. It's possible that you can hit, be angry and fearful. Want to suppress the anger because it would further make the situation unstable and cause more fear. Plus, we're taught from the very beginning you're not supposed to feel that.
So there couldn't be a separate feeling in there First off, I'm angry at Mom for hitting me. I'm fearful that now she might not meet my needs, but I'm also hurt that she would take that kind of action towards me when I'm the child that she's supposed to love.
Is that fair?
It's not fair.
Anger. Anger is the feeling you get when you perceive not fair. She shouldn't have done that.
Right.
That means it's not fair.
Yeah.
So that's not fair.
Okay. All right. I'll hold that thought.
Okay.
Because I have more questions.
Allow me to present my entire thesis.
Yeah, I will. Okay.
How you doing, Sam?
Good, good. I had a question.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, that was great. That was a really, really good learning experience. I loved it. How about OCD people?
They have a feeling inside they don't like, and they're doing the obsessive or compulsive behavior as a distractor.
Yeah, that's such a debilitating. Do you think? Is it that simple? Because I don't know. How come there's so many people who suffer and can't get over it?
Because people don't know how to treat it.
Yeah. Have you worked with people using this?
Like trichotillomania.
Yes. Well, that's pulling hair.
That's a compulsion of hair pulling.
Okay. Yeah.
Germs. Eyelash pulling, eyebrow pulling.
The germs thing.
Germs, same thing. There's a fear. It's fear. Follow it back, neutralize it. It's more like a phobia.
Okay.
Right. But you're right.
All of a sudden, I just got that.
But for either, lots of information out there. Something else is up there. They tend to be on. I didn't think it would be good.
I just got lost at the part where you can enhance your breasts.
Oh.
I can't get past that right now. Yeah, or it says you should be, you can stop bleeding, stop your body from bleeding.
Same idea, I think it's a breast curl, memory glands as well.
And is it like permanent then? Your blood always flows there? Or is it not flowing then?
Are you talking about the breasting cancer again?
I can't quite get past it yet. Well, then I could direct the oxygen to flow to my legs so that I could run better.
Yeah.
There's
no money in that.
No. There might be other people.
Yeah,
there's
right? Are
we talking about money?
The breast enhancement.
Oh, the breast enhancement.
Mm. But you know what? I wouldn't even want to go back to the small town I'm from and tell anybody that breast enhancement would be a possibility because it would completely destroy any credibility that it would have. You know, I could never advertise that.
But if you do it once, where it'll get out.
Yeah, it's obvious. According to the Duke study, I think it was the Duke study, ladies that went under hypnosis, probably, I think it was 6 sessions, experienced a couple of signs.
For how long? For breast enhancement.
For how long?
Well, what was it? Is
was
it permanent?
Was that with suggestion or without suggestion?
Yeah, for anything. I wouldn't have to stop biting my nails.
You need to say, look, I'm over here.
No.
Yes, but we're going to make you stop.
Oh, okay.
I know you don't know. Okay, help me stop biting my nails. And I think I might maybe have a little psychological issue. I've done them forever. I don't notice myself doing it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. But I do notice myself Exactly. And then the reason I don't like it is because it was very unprofessional. And, you know, through much of my life, I didn't care at all. And I thought, you know, I don't really know. She's got such beautiful nails. You've got some high nails. I don't want necessarily beautiful high nails. I just don't want them to be bleeding or to be colored and short. Because as soon as in a couple times I have shopped, they've gotten that it bothers me to feel them, you know, and
then fingers.
There seems to be an issue about breast enhancement.
Are you saying that this is like an organic sort of process? Some stuff I said.
that it seems like this follows that.
I only look like I'm listening.
No, it's actually
clearly like one.
I only look like I'm listening.
That's because those ears are dangling there.
You don't even know what
I'm listening. Well, I'm talking too loud. I'm going to work on that.
I only look like I'm interested. All right. Any questions about anything covered so far? Good. All right. Any questions about anything not covered so far? I walk in, I hear, cow this, cow that, and then I say, okay, any questions?
Age progression. Not covered
yet. Age progression is exactly the opposite of age regression.
That's a high road, low road.
What we'll do is, after we have deprogrammed someone from whatever caused the problem in the past, and we've made a good change using the informed child technique, we'll then take them into the future, probable future, doing when you go in the past, that's called revivification. I coined a term for when we go into the future called pre-vivification, so that they can pre-live the events of their lives, which would be anticipated having made these changes. Because in life, we tend to experience what we expect to experience. So if an individual has a fear that maybe they'll go out drinking with their buddies and smoke, and we give them suggestions that they'll be able to get through that fine, we undo whatever caused the problem in the past, and then we take them into the probable future, what? Handling the situation beautifully. What if we have someone that's is concerned about, you know, not exercising? We go back and find the cause of that. Then we go into the future where they get to, you know, go in the future and have fun and be successful exercising. If they want to be alcohol-free, we then take them into the future where they can go into these different events, hallucinate, right? It's not just visualization. Okay? High road, low road is not a hallucination, typically. It is just like timeline therapy, a weak alternative to age regression. In age regression, they've had the experience of reliving. So now we can take them to the future and have them pre-live it. And there's tons of scientific data that shows that the subconscious mind cannot tell the difference between a vividly imagined experience and a real one. Well, let me tell you, when we turn it up beyond imagination into hallucination, it's even more powerful than that.
Have you ever gotten reports from your clients regarding deja vu with this particular experience?
No. It could happen, though. But I just haven't had it reported. Seems like a logical thing.
That's
to happen.
That's what you said the last time.
Okay. Any other questions? I walked in. Cal this, cal that. What?
I was asking, is that like an organic process? To me, it's like almost natural. I mean, I've done some of the things that whenever I've watched people do work without being guided too much, it's that same sort of process. It just kind of flows.
Yes. Well, what will happen is, for example, you'll get to forgiveness of others, and some people want to go into, oh, I really need to forgive myself. And I say, self, take a number, we'll get to you. They'll anticipate what's coming up next. Mm-hmm. So, as far as I know, the first person to use forgiveness therapy in a way that we use it now, which is an the way we're going to be doing forgiveness therapy is really a version of Fritz Perls chair therapy and Gestalt school of thought. But the problem with that school of thought was you take people of normal waking consciousness and say, pretend your dad's in that chair and tell him what you really think of him. And the guy goes, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard of, you know. Or they'll do it and it just feels very contrived. But in hypnosis, at the level of somnambulism, we go, your dad's in that chair. Take back control and tell him what you've always wanted to tell him. You see, and it's different because we have the compliance, we have the suggestibility. Okay? Plus, we've already done the age regression and we know what their history is like together. So it goes further. But the first person I know to use that kind of Gestalt technique, and I could be in era of this, but one day I was at Jerry Kine's house, and I said, Jerry, where did you get the idea of doing forgiveness therapy in age regression? Because he does it different. He does that forgiveness therapy in the age regression. And he says, well, I was working with this client, I couldn't get her to get over this problem, and so I just said to the client who was in hypnosis, what do you got to do to resolve this? And she said, well, I suppose I'd have to forgive the SOB, you know, kind of a thing. Okay, good, do it. And then so he started using this kind of Fritz Perlian type thing we put, and he calls it chair therapy. And what we do is we take that, we put it in a place that's separate from the age regression, and plus I'm going to give you a whole bunch of tools. When I took the course, when you ask questions about, well, how exactly do you do that, what stuck out in my mind was Jerry said, you have to kind of Philadelphia lawyer it. In other words, talk them into doing the forgiving. And then, you know, a couple thousand forgiveness therapy sessions later, I saw what I was doing that was working, and then I provide that for you in the Level 2 manual. And of most importance is what we will call the 10 keys to forgiveness, and you'll have a specific set of tools so that you can be useful, so that you can be successful in getting your client to forgive the offender every single time. I'm always successful at that.
That's where the real freedom is coming to
you. Well, if it's about anger, that is. But if it's about fear, the real, then it's an age regression. If it's about guilt, then it's about care. But we don't live in a brain that is so pure like that. It doesn't think in terms of just fear. The things that cause us fearful, somebody did that to us. That's the way we think. And so there's anger. Once we get rid of that, we'll recognize that we had a component in that, and there's guilt. And so there's this holographic mind that we live in.
Okay. There seems to be no lines anymore in any human modality. You know, we say we don't practice psychotherapy. Intrudes into the space of where they would call their realm and their domain, just like chiropractors and massage therapists and everything, energy workers and all that. We now have this big spectrum of continuum. So what would you consider the fine line of distinction between what we do in psychotherapy, if there is any, or the imaginary?
What we're doing, psychotherapists aspire to do.
That's always been my thinking and contention.
Years?
And half the time, whenever I was in therapy after session number 2 or 3, the check should have been coming across the table the other way.
Yeah. Believe me, the stuff I'm teaching you, they did not teach me in graduate school. You know, we did it never went this far. I have clinical psychologists come to this class, 20 years experience, and they said, they'll watch a video of me working, and they say, you just did in an hour, which would take me weeks or months if I ever get it accomplished. And she said, and I'm really good at talking about her. And her training doesn't take her there. So we're going to go much further. And you know what? What we're doing right now is we're training the supervisors, the consultants, and the teachers of tomorrow. Because they're going to come begging for this stuff in greater numbers than they are now. The population and also the helping professionals. That's why we've got Nancy Ho in Singapore. We've got a couple guys in Australia. We got someone in UK. We got someone in Lebanon that are all becoming instructors of this style. Because this is the elite. We're doing what hypnotherapists wish they could. You know what this is? This is what I got into psychology in the first place to do. This is what I thought I was going to do. And after 7 or 8 years of training, I couldn't do it. Okay? And so I kept studying and put this together. And now you master this, and you are the best of the best. Love talking about it. I think you were next, Sue.
Do you talk to people when they are in hypnosis and ask them, what do you need to do to fix this? You gave that as an example.
Sometimes, but I will say inside of you the words that need to be said.
Okay.
So that she can, whatever it is that we're working on. That's one of the big differences between us and a psychologist or a psychiatrist. If you're the counselor, the psychologist, or the psychiatrist, you're supposed to know what they need. The hypnotherapist, especially the five-path hypnotherapist, says, I have a process that if I do it well, will reveal to the client what they already know about what they need to know. And they will be able to say and understand and have the insights. But so many times, the client will emerge from those and go, wow, I never knew that. But where did I get it from? Inside of their subconscious mind. They knew it, but because of repression or convenient forgetting or distraction, they just have disconnected from it. And so we reveal the truth that's inside of them in a useful way.
That's so much more empowering.
That's right. I just have a process that if they go through kicking and screaming and yelling, when they come out the other side, they feel so much better.
So, after you finish the age regression and the third or second session they come back in, you're so close to neutralizing anger. Are they coming in really like mad and during that week or whatever?
Well, sometimes they're cranky.
Yeah, I mean, is that a bad thing? I mean, could it reverse the process?
Not unless they hurt or kill somebody.
Oh, that's
encouraging. Well, if they're really upset, I say, look, anger is not bad. It's what you do with it that's either good, bad, or ineffective.
So you tell them ahead of time this week you might
if they're really, so, you know, I'm really kind of angry about now, you know, about that whole thing. I say, good. I said, you know, was it fair what they did? And they say, no. And I say, then you're supposed to be angry. It's the not expressing that feeling that's caused you to drink or whatever it is. Because the feeling would start to come up and they just take their mind off of it. Maybe they're a workaholic and they go to work. They need to let that feeling come up for a while. Now, they're not allowed to hurt anybody or themselves, but guess what? They might be a little bit tough to live with for a month. I know. If you're a husband, you know what that is like, right? You know? So,
When I went through this, I was so physically drained that I had to, like, go to bed really early at night. I mean, it was a physical... I was like I had a little touch of the flu or something.
Yep. Sure. Well, there's two reasons for that. One is, if you do the insight therapy, it causes a ripple effect through your entire neurology. Because your brain is built upon the connections of the child. That's where the adolescent brain is built. And then the teenage brain is built on the neural connections of the adolescent. And the adult brain is built upon the neural connections of the teenager. And if you go back and you make a change in the neural connections of the infant, that is going to ripple through all the neural connections of the brain that stem from those earlier beliefs. That's going to be exhausting. That's going to require a great deal of mental and neurological energy. And for some people, 1, 2, or 3 days, they're exhausted. There can also be flu-like symptoms. And that is, one of the ways we handle our emotions is by clamping down. We push the emotion down. And the unconscious mind is in charge of the body and will clamp down. And what will happen is when there is an emotional clamping down, there is a correlated physiological clamping down. And so there will be restriction in the vascularity, in the organs and in the muscles, which can even result in pain. And read John Sarno's Healing Back Pain. He talks a lot about that. And when we unclamp those emotions, then all of a sudden the circulatory system opens up, and that clamping down can cause toxins to be held in the body. And all of a sudden there is this release of toxins, and it can be like a flu symptom for a while. People will get diarrhea, some people will even vomit. I've had people, you know, have to vomit in my chair. And, you know, I always just give them the little trash can that's lined with plastic and say, you know, if you got to vomit, vomit. This isn't about holding it in anymore. This is about letting it out.
That's a convincer.
Yeah.
That's right.
I worked with somebody who was a nutritional counselor that had a Puritan diet for 18 years. And in 3.5 hours, she smelled hideous. She knew it.
So here's a fun thought.
She never felt better than she had in her life. Just, God, I bet I stink. You know, yeah, you do, but it's great.
Yeah. And 7-path will do everything that 5-path will do. And so when you start doing 7-path, all these symptoms can emerge. And it's not uncommon for people to get nauseated, throw up, have to go take a rapid bowel movement, stink, smell, get rashes, headaches, and all that stuff during this next week or so that we do 7-path.
Really?
Good morning.
Yep.
Are there issues or situations where you did use classroom?
Yeah, if someone's mentally ill, I won't do it if unless I have a psychiatrist in my back pocket, because their symptomology is going to come up. So mental illness. If the person has a heart condition where becoming really, really upset could cause them to die, because almost everybody gets really upset during 5-PATH and that kind of stuff.
So depression and severe depression and anxiety, is that fundamentally considered
If they are so emotionally distraught that they have psychotic features, I wouldn't do it. They see things or they get delusional and stuff like that. Kind of like schizophrenic kind of stuff. But like with bipolar disorder, it can be so bad that they get psychotic. They get delusional ideation, even hallucinate and stuff like that. And people can become a danger to themselves or others or property when they're like that, and they really need to be under close supervision of a medical staff and stuff like that. If I had that kind of environment set up, I would probably do 5-PATH. But I just can't I can't guarantee safety of people like that being the lone hypnotist.
We're still on questions and answers.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you use the 5-PATH for almost every, and a person presents themselves to you for almost every issue?
Everything.
Fire spiders.
Okay. Everything. Read my lips.
Did you read it?
No.
There's only one exception, and there is one particular exception that with some smoking clients that I will talk about later. And we only do that because there's so many people out there doing 1-2 sessions, stop smoking, and so to remain competitive, we do a shorter version for that. But it's a special abbreviated form of 5-PATH. But everything else, we do 5-PATH.
Like
Dave Elman has progresses people and then kind of gives them that insight they needed, and then they get better. And he didn't do any of that anger, reading the anger forgiveness stuff. Now, is that the case in 5-PATH where you just regress them and then they spontaneously get better without having to go through phases 3 and 4?
No. Because we found out that Dave Elman's procedure, which is the best thing ever to come along until the 50s and 60s, is not always enough. And that if we get really good at doing this other stuff, everybody gets phase 1 through 4. Very, very useful. And you'll get to see how that is as we get into it. Insight therapy alone is not sufficient in every case. Good. Now we're going to move on. It's time to get to work. Page 69, one of my favorite pages, because it's got the induction on it. It's right after 68. Let's really dissect this induction. Because in a few minutes you're going to be using it on each other. So, on the right side, on page... Let's digress a little bit more. Let's advance a little bit. And on 71, hopefully you've read that. If you haven't, you need to read it before you practice. But these are some points to remember when conducting a hypnotic induction. So before you actually do the induction, please read and understand that stuff. Now, back to the induction. Now, there's a part on there where it says, 1, relaxing the body. That's not in italics, so you don't say it to the client. Okay? That's the same for number 2. Number 2, relaxing the mind. You don't say it to the client, only the stuff that's in italics. So you get your person into a chair, a recliner. Sometimes I do it standing up for demonstrations and stuff. But I chose not to do it standing at this time, yesterday. And you have this out of sight. Okay? You do not hold it in front of your client. Doesn't that look stupid? Yeah. It's like that knows me now. Take a look at my hand. Take a nice deep breath, exhale. No. That says, I don't know what I'm doing yet. So you don't do that. So you have it out of sight.
Take a nice deep breath.
Exhale. Close your eyes. Now take your attention to your eyelids. Now their eyes are closed. That's when you segue over to reading it. Okay? So you have to kind of memorize. Take a look at my hand. Take a nice deep breath. Exhale. Close your eyes. Then you reach down and grab your script quietly. And you say, now take your attention to your eyelids. You can relax your eyelids so much that they just won't work. Once you're sure that you've done that, hold on to that relaxation. Now check them to make sure they won't work. Now there's a number of different changes that, between the standard Elman and my version. I'm going to talk about some of those things. I talk about it in the end of the Hypnosis and Hypnotherapy book. Some of them are very minor, and some of them are bigger. A very minor change was right here. Now check them to make sure they won't work. I don't say test them to make sure they won't work. Why? Because some people, any kind of test, they get anxious, worried, nervous, fearful. That inhibits hypnosis. That's the last thing I would want to do at this stage. So go check them to make sure they won't work. Good. Stop testing. Now I say testing. Why? Because tests that we have successfully passed and are behind us do not make us nervous. In fact, having passed a test and having it behind us makes us feel confident. Oh, I passed a test. Right? Okay. So every word here is, you know, pretty much thought out and for a reason. Good. Stop testing and go deeper, relax. Now send that feeling of relaxation down to your body from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Count to two. Once you give them something to do, let them do it before you move on. So you go, send that feeling all the way down from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Good. See, and then you move on. Sometimes I have filler patter that I'll say. I'll say, send that feeling all the way down from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. The deeper you go, the better you feel, the better you feel, the deeper you go. And it's just filler pattern. It's not required. Now I'm going to do a check to make sure that you've understood and followed my instructions. In a moment, I'm going to lift your hand and drop it. Don't help me lift it. Just let it be limp and relaxed. Let me do all the lifting, pick it up a couple inches, and drop it and say, good, go deeper. All right. Now, Sib yesterday asked me, what if they don't have a relaxed hand? I said, I will get into that. Okay. This is a very complicated question. Sometimes I don't care, and sometimes I do. If relaxation is really, really important, then I will do a little bit of coaching. Like some people, guys, we don't understand women. We never will. We do the best we can. But if a woman perceives herself to be at least 4 ounces overweight, there's going to be a reluctance of letting us feel the weight of her arm in many cases. Not always.
Is that what it is?
And they get floaty hand syndrome. You pick it up and it's like a feather. You let go of it.
Yeah.
It's so funny. You pick it up, let it be loose, limp, and relaxed, like a bag of sand. You let go of it and goes, okay. You know what? Quite often I don't worry about that too much. I just move on. Because she thinks she's relaxed. John. About the fat lady?
Yeah.
That's 4 ounces overweight?
Yes.
Okay. Ladies, sometimes, and guys too, but probably it's more gays. I mean, ladies. Maybe it's a feminine thing. I don't know. But the deal is, some women are going to be reluctant to let you feel the weight of their arm, particularly if they perceive themselves to be overweight. And guess what? Reality often has nothing to do with it. A guy would never even think that you're overweight, but you got what's in your head is what counts. You lift their arm, you get floaty hand, and it just goes down. You know what? I'm often not going to worry about that too much. But if I get stiff arm, I feel some resistance pulling it up, and it's very mechanical and kind of rigid, what do? Never criticize your clients. So now I'm in a dilemma. Never criticize your clients. So now my client is not following my instructions. I said let the arm be loose, limp, and relaxed, and I got what? I got stiff arm. What am I supposed to say? What part of relax your arm didn't you understand?
That part,
huh?
Let's try it again.
No, that implies it failed. There's only one thing I can do. I praise them for whatever I got. Unless I think the person's giving me the, you know, hypnotic middle finger and not being compliant, then I can assume that they're doing the best they can. So I praise them. I say, good, beautiful. What does that do? That kind of relaxes them a little bit. Nature of human beings to do better with practice. And then what I'll do, come here, please. She's put on her shoes. Thank you very much. So let's say I lift the arm up and I get a little bit of resistance, a little bit stiff. I'll say, good, beautiful. Nature of human beings do better with practice. Now relax the elbow, relax the shoulder, and go deeper. There's only two ways that you can lock the arm. That's in the elbow and the shoulder. And so what I do is I just unlock it. You see how that felt? Mm-hmm. So you got this kind of, make it so you got, I let go and nothing happens. I go, good, beautiful. Relax the elbow, relax the shoulder, and go deeper. Now, one thing we can do is floaty arm. Do floaty arm, or I don't feel your weight at all. But, well, it's got to start happening. Okay? I go, oh, good, beautiful. It just kind of floats down. Do that. Good, beautiful. Human beings do better with practice. Let's do that one more time. And as I move your hand around and around, it becomes heavier, 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 and deeper. What I do is I create weight through centrifugal force. I'm moving your hand in a circle. What does that do? It creates centrifugal force, false gravity. And so what I do is, so she's got light, and I go round and around and around. When I let go on the down, it goes kaplop. See, and they go, ah, thank you.
Thank you. All right. At some point, will you do your tie and put her back?
If you got the money, honey, I got the time. Okay. So that's how we handle that stuff. Then we're down here, we're down to the next paragraph. Human beings do better with practice, so let's do that one more time, and you'll find that you can go even deeper. Now here, please let me have your attention. I'm not talking about do the arm thing again. We've done that. Now I'm talking about, I just keep reading. That's all you do. Just keep reading. There's no intellectual thing here. Just keep reading. There's no implied message that you have to go back and do the arm thing. No. You just keep reading. Because somebody's going to come to me, you know, when I read that human beings do better practice, let's do that one more time, I thought you meant do the arm thing again. No! You just keep reading. Okay? Human beings do better practice. Let's do that one more time. You will find that you can go even deeper. Take your attention to your eyelids. Hold on to that relaxation. One more time. Test them to make sure they won't work. Good. Stop testing and go deeper. Now send that feeling of relaxation that you're allowing in your eyelids down across your entire body, to the top of your head, to the tips of your toes, as if you meant to go 10 times deeper. 1, 2. Let them do that. One more time. Take your attention to your eyelids and just relax them. And just like before, relax them. So make sure they won't work. Good, stop testing, go deeper. Send that feeling down across your body as if you meant to go 2 times deeper. Now, here's the question I was getting. How come 10 times deeper and then 2 times deeper? Is there one of that? Ooh. The answer is I changed stuff that needed changing. Dave Elman decided to do 10 times and 2 times, and he's dead. So we don't know. But I have no reason to change it. That's the way he did it. No reason to change it. He's dead. I don't know. We could have a seance. That'd be fun. Now let's relax the mind. Really allow your mind to relax like your body's relaxed. In a moment, I'm going to have you slowly and softly. Now notice I said slowly, slowly, and softly, softly. Time for a heart-to-heart discussion. I want you to think about all the great hypnotists of the world. What is the proper tone of voice, the best tone of voice to use when doing hypnosis?
Natural.
Natural? Regular?
In a lower tone than your normal voice.
Lower tone.
So whatever the condition calls for.
You guys all stink.
Oh.
Well, anyway.
The one that matches what you're trying to relay.
Yeah, you and Michael are right. And that is the tone that's congruent with the message. When you're deepening, then you want to use a tone that's soothing and deepening. But when I do arm catalepsy, what do? Stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. Right? I don't go, now your arm is stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. No. So your eyes are locked down, glued shut, zip tight, you see? So you want to use a voice that's consistent, congruent with what the message on your tongue. So we say slowly, slowly, and softly, softly. Once you begin counting out loud, slowly and softly, starting with the number one. Now, unless you're trying to relax someone or tighten someone or anger someone, then the normal tone is appropriate. If I'm just giving instructions, then I just use an instructional voice. Take a look at my hand, take a nice deep breath, exhale, close your eyes. So that part was right for that specific thing. When I'm deepening someone, you're right. You should use a kind of deeper, softer voice. But if I'm doing stiff and rigid, like a bar of steel, then I need to have that tone of voice. So you want to use a voice that's congruent. So now let's relax your mind. Really allow your mind to relax like your body's relaxed. In a moment, I'm going to have you slowly and softly begin to count out loud, starting with the number one. Now here is a difference between me and Elman. Elman always started with 100 or 99 and went backwards. And what we found out was, that's problematic. Does anyone have any idea why that might be problematic?
Some people have a tough time counting backwards.
No.
It's such a time.
There's a limitation.
All of those things. There's a lot of problems with it. One is, it's not a lot harder, but it is a little bit harder counting backwards than it is forwards. Second is you can run out of numbers. Third, some people, it's like a dare. You go, I want you to slowly and softly begin counting backwards, starting with 100, okay, 90, 100, 99, 98, 97, 96, 95, 94, 90, and they're like a train going down the track. And you can't even get, and it's, you know, you're saying everything you can think of, and they're just going until they hit zero. Finally, I say, what part of fate am out of your mind didn't you understand? So one of the things I thought of was, what am I suggesting? Slowly, softly, fading the numbers away. Okay. Mental relaxation. Okay. If I want people to do something to relax their mind, should I do something that takes more mental effort or less mental effort?
Less.
So counting forward takes less mental effort. That's one reason why I did that. The other is resistance is futile. I got as many numbers as I need. They're not going to go all the way down to zero and go... Okay, and there was something that shifted in the brain of some people who were going to go all the way down to zero no matter what I said. And they eventually, after a few numbers, they click, wait a minute, this could go on forever. Okay, and so shifting around got rid of some of those problems. There's some preparatory work I will do with some people who are overly analytical or very strict in their thinking or very... And this is what I'll do before the session, because talking to them, you'll start to pick it up. As I say, in this work we're going to do, I'm going to talk to you about relaxation. And I will do the part about, I'm going to have you relax your eyelids. And I want to make sure you understand that. And I will say to them at the desk, before we do the hypnosis, I say, if I ask you to make your hand so tight that you just couldn't make it any tighter, if you'd have a mind to do that, you could do that, couldn't you? I nod my head and they go, uh-huh. Good. And then if I ask you to make that hand so loose, so limp, so relaxed, and couldn't you be any more relaxed, if you'd have a mind to do that, you could do that too, couldn't you? Yeah, good. Pick one hand and do that. Let the hand be relaxed. Hold on to that relaxation. Now, while holding on to the relaxation, try to make a fist. And if they make a fist, I go, is it still relaxed? And they go, uh-uh. I go, good, we just learned something. Now make it relaxed. Now while holding on to the relaxation, try to make a fist. Ah, good. Now I want you to just close your eyes, let your eyelids relax like your hand was relaxed. Just like your hand wouldn't work, now your eyelids won't work. Do that for me now. Good. Well, I'll have you do that in the induction. Oh, okay, I can do that. Ta-da! I don't have any problems with that anymore. I'll do that with everybody. But if someone does have trouble with the eye closure part of the element, I'll just throw that in. It takes me a minute. But I will also, you get kind of an extra sensory perception of who's going to need that kind of coaching ahead of time. And I'll just do it ahead of time prophylactically. Then also, people who I think are going to be, you know, overly analytical and stuff, I will say, there's going to come a part in the program where I ask you to relax your mind. Now, what does that mean? Let's do that. What does that mean, relax your mind? What do you think that means? Impossible.
Yeah, my mind's always racing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So now we got a problem. But if I tell you to stop thinking, everybody's going to fail.
Yes.
At least that's what I think. So, I say, okay, let's talk about this. There's relaxation and there's work. Effort and no effort. I could start walking across this floor, and if I put half the amount of work or effort into each step, pretty soon I won't be able to take another step. And all of a sudden, if I put half the amount of effort into the previous step, I can't take another step. Eventually that's going to happen. It might be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 steps. It doesn't matter. You got that? And depending on the person I might have next to it, stand up. And start walking, put half the amount of effort. Good. So as long as you stick to that instruction, you can't walk any further, right? Good. Now let's do that. Use that idea for mental effort. If I started counting, see, counting doesn't take a lot of effort, but it takes a little bit of effort, right? 1, 2, 3. What I'd like, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to count, and with each number, I'm going to put half the amount of effort, which would be twice the amount of relaxation, right? And do each number. 1, 2, 3, 4. And they're gone. Because if I it would require me to put more, as much effort as I put in the last number, but I just put half. And so what will happen is if they, I say, now do that for me. And they go, 1, 2, 3, 4. And some people will continue counting in their mind, but not out loud. And I'll just say, if you're counting in your mind, put half as much effort into each number until there's no more numbers. And they'll stop. Now, try that on your own sometime. You'll see it feels very hypnotic. If you just sit there and you go, 1, 2. Big boy, you can just feel yourself going. That's part of the genius of the element induction, is this losing the numbers thing. So I've been able to overcome any problem I have with any of those over-analytical people. You just got to break it down into something that's logical. You just got to be, that's it. I'm one of those people. I'm just a slave to logic. It's got to make sense. Fuzzy logic doesn't work for me. That's like if someone says, double your mental relaxation. Oh my God. How How will I know when it's doubled? Or put in half the amount of effort. I can kind of do that for some reason. Because effort is measurable. So then I can just say, double the relaxation is the same as half the amount of effort. Oh, I got it. See, does that all make sense to you? So if you have trouble with losing the numbers, the whole idea is half the amount of effort. And pretty soon there's no more number. The other thing that can happen is they can count too fast. If they go 1, 2, 3, it's kind of like ringing a bell, and you can kind of still hear the last number. And so you have to get them to go slowly. Because if you go slowly, it requires more mental effort to recall what number comes next. 1. If I go 1, 2, 3, 4, it's like A, B, C, D. And each number, each letter reminds you of the next one. But if I go 1, and then have that experience of relaxing my mind, 2, then it becomes more effort required to call the next number. So eventually, you can't, unless you go backwards and start putting more energy into it, you can't recall the next number. We've created amnesia by suggestion. And we have threshold level 4. Got it? Questions? So now,
when we do this, this is not what you call a covert test. This is just part of the induction process. This is where I kind of got confused.
When they lose the numbers in the induction, when you're doing the induction, and they cannot remember the next number, that is a covert test for amnesia.
But
it's still a test, but they failed it.
Okay. But they know they failed.
But they don't know it's a test. They don't know it's a test for hypnotism. Okay. They know that they're not following instructions, and you can call them on that. Yeah. You'll open your eyes, look at me. When I say slower, you got to go slower. When I say softer, you got to go softer, or this isn't going to work. It's not like where I'm overpowering you with my brain and there's electrical impulses coming out through my eyes. You know, when I say slower, you got to go slower, or it's not going to work. You got it? Okay, good. Close your eyes. Start counting slowly and softly, starting with the number 1. Begin. And then they go, 1, 2, 3, 4. I go, you're out of here. You know, I can't work with you unless you follow my instructions. If the doctor says lay down on the table, you got to lay down on the table, man. You know? So stick out your tongue and say, oh, you got it. He can't do that for you. You know? You got to follow the instructions. Sometimes you have to have the talk. We'll talk more about the talk. Okay. Now let's relax the mind. Really allow your mind to relax like your body is relaxed. So the moment I'm going to have you slowly and softly begin to count out loud, starting with the number 1. After each number, let your mind double its relaxation. After a few numbers, it doesn't take long, we'll be able to relax your mind so nicely that the numbers will fade away to nothing, nothing, nothing. Want that, and you can have it very easily. When the numbers are gone, raise your right index finger to let me know how well you're doing. When you say right index finger, you need to tap the right index finger, because there is an amazing segment, an amazingly large segment of the population that isn't always so sure about right and left.
Right here.
Yeah. So if you go right, those people immediately go into a state of anxiety and stop listening. They go, okay, right. And you're still talking, and they're on this, trying to figure out right and left. So you go, your right index finger. And now that's behind them. They know what they're going to do.
Yeah. Excuse me. You have here a hyphen between want that, and I've had some people say, yeah. I mean, are you looking for eliciting a response?
No, want that, and you can have it very easily. But if you go, want that, they'll answer. They go, good, then you can have it very easily.
I have one that's been a little, and just because the grammar sounds funny, it's go deeper, relaxed, again, rather than go deeper in relaxation. But I see that in several of the scripts. Is that very specific that way?
Good, go deeper, relax. That's a problem?
It just sounds grammatically weird. Go deeper into relaxation. It's like there's no destination. And it just, I don't know, it sounds funny.
So far,
I know it works.
It hasn't been a problem.
Okay. So it's specifically been designed that way, for some reason nobody knows about.
Short is better.
He's dead.
All right.
You know,
past tense, so you still, you kind of give
relax.
Them
go deep, good.
Go deep,
deep
relax.
Relax.
The presupposition, you're already relaxed.
Right. We want them to now go deeper, relax. So we go, good. Go deeper, relax. I don't understand. Am I, you know,
relax.
I'm not an English teacher.
It's not grammatically.
It's not grammatically correct.
You know, everybody has a style of speech. Do it this way in class. If you want to vary it after class, do it. There's a lot of little minor changes you can make that won't hurt this at all, but there are some minor changes that will hurt it.
Why was that?
I don't think, say, go deeper into relaxation. I don't think that's going to hurt anything.
Okay, or relax deeper. That would be about the same.
That sounds like about the same.
Okay, that's fine.
But I'd like you to stay with the exactly the way it is in class, and this is why. Because if you start varying it from class, everybody else in class knows almost exactly how it's supposed to go. And if you start saying a little bit different, they'll start thinking, is that how it goes? And now they're thinking about the wording changes. So just do it. Just read it exactly as it is. Yes?
I think the fact that it's not grammatically correct makes it more noticeable and more...
That's what I'm
thinking. Because I remember when you were saying that, I noticed that would stick my mind deep or relaxed. But it was a bit off, you know, but...
Are you saying go deeper, relaxed is grammatically incorrect?
Correct,
it's
yes.
It's
grammatically
incorrect. It sounds odd.
Maybe it's just talk odd.
Well, like the minute thing. You know, I mean, it's just a small thing. I didn't know. I
don't
know.
I don't know. You know what? You ever heard of Stevie Ray Vaughan?
Yeah.
All my favorite guitar players are dead. But he's dead. But I was listening to the radio one day, and his brother was being interviewed, who's also a very good blues guitar player. And the interviewer was saying, man, that's Stevie Ray. I saw him play in San Francisco, I saw him in Texas. And, you know, one of my favorite songs, he plays Voodoo Child. And I don't think he ever played the same song the same way twice. And his brother said, Stevie Ray never played the same song the same way once. Okay? And that's it. Once you really understand how this is working, you're constantly playing it a little bit different. But you're staying within the rules.
Yeah.
But blues has got rules. Rock and roll's got blues. You know, jazz, rules. They got rules, right?
Yeah.
All these different things. And I stay within the rules. And so it still works. If you're really good at the rules of inductions and stuff, there's things you can change. In fact, I actually have a newer version that's better than this that I can hand out, but it didn't get... Maureen asked me not to hand it out because it was too late, but I still might hand it out. But for this works fine. And then I also have a permissive version of this I'm going to hand out. But for your practice, just stick with this. There's actually a better version than this.
Sinister.
Next week I'll hand it out. Because there are some things in here, and I'm always doing that. I'm always updating it. There's some things in here that I found ways to do better. Mark has a copy of it, don't you, Mark?
Is that the one that you introduced to the Yahoo group?
Yeah, the better version. There's a couple of, like, minor little typos or stuff in it, but it's a better version. Yeah, more updated.
So if we're not hopefully, we can get that to her. And Maureen doesn't need to know anything.
We will hand it out next week. But I don't want to have all these different versions running around while you guys are practicing. Just have one. This version has worked for thousands of sessions. By hundreds of different hypnotherapists. But the new one's a little bit better, I think. Okay. Now, back in the appendices... Oh, wait, I didn't go through the deepening and relaxation. There's 1, 2, 3. On the back, there is... In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 5 with each... Wait, not ready to go there either yet. So, raise your right index finger to let me know how well you're doing. I'm still on 69. Then they say 1. At that exact time, I touch their shoulder. Why? It interrupts them and keeps them from going 1, 2, 3, 4. And that's a little technique. They go 1. I go, good. Okay? Slower or softer. Well, here I say softer. Good. Softer. And I say, softer, softer. And they go, two. I say, slower. They say, three. Now double your mental relaxation. They say, four. Let them begin to fade away as you relax your mind. Five, double your mental relaxation, fading away to touching on their finger. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Now, as you do that, some people will go to 10. That's okay. If someone goes to 10 and they reach somnambulism, it's a beautiful day. If they go to 15 and they reach somnambulism, it's a beautiful day. The next time you do it with them, they're probably only going to go half as many. Next time, half as many. And after you've done it a few times, they go, one, and they go, because they know where they're going. But have a little patience with them. As long as I'm saying slower, softer, relax the mind, and they are speaking slower and softer, then they're on their way. It's when I go, slower, and they go, two, softer, three, really relax your mind, four, okay, open your eyes. We gotta have a talk. When I say slower, you gotta do slower. Okay? So I just, whatever level of hypnosis we have, if we have any, I say, open your eyes, look at me. And I explain to them, you gotta do this. But if I'm saying slower, softer, relax your mind, and each number they say is more relaxed than the one before, I don't care how many it takes. It could take 25. I don't care. It's not an ego thing. And when I was first studying this stuff, I was under the impression that if I didn't get them to lose their numbers by the time they got to 4 or 5, there was something wrong with me.
Gotcha.
There's individual differences. Some people just, you know, they got to count to 25. Good. Next time you do it, they'll count to 12. Next time it's 6. Big deal.
So when they say 5, you say nothing, 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 and they stay 6. How do you say?
I just start over.
Okay.
Soft. 7.
And they go,
double your mental relaxation. Now what will happen is, sometimes something happens before amnesia, and it's called aphasia. And that is the inability to articulate a word. So if they stop counting out loud, but they haven't raised their finger, they're saying, I can no longer articulate the words, but I'm still counting. Don't panic. You stop saying softer because they can't go any softer. But you can still say slower, double your mental relaxation, fading away to nothing, nothing. And usually 2 or 3 times through that, and they give you the finger.
That's cool.
But you feel good about it somehow, okay?
And saying good and deeper are always two things that, if you were at a loss for words, saying good, go deeper.
Well, it depends. If they're responding in the way that you're suggesting, say good. But some people, I watch it, they go one, and you go softer, and they go two, and you go good. Now you've just praised not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So you just got to be very cognizant of what you're saying. Don't praise incorrect behavior. Okay. All right. If parents would learn that, movie theaters and restaurants would be a much more pleasant place to go. Okay, once they give you the finger, then what you do, you just love that part, don't you? Okay. We go to the next one, deepen the relaxation. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 5. With each number that I count, allow yourself to relax so much with each number that by the time I get to 5, it'll be as if we've doubled your relaxation. 1, relaxation is beginning to double. 2, it's doubling more and more. 3, relaxation is doubling throughout your entire body. 4, your relaxation is almost doubled. 5, relaxation is completely doubled from the top of your head to the tips of your toes. And then you can proceed. Now,
can you take a question?
Come on. That italic-sized print is not always easy to read. So, we have another version of it on page 135. Slightly larger font and not italicized. Which is easier to read, like in a darkened room and stuff like that. Page 135 and 136. And there it is. The part, you'll see some of it's kind of grayed out. That's the parenthetical remark. Since we couldn't not italicize it, we decided that we would gray it So you can see that that's not what you say. See, do you just say the part that's in black? Now, yes, there was a question, Michael?
Yes, I don't know if this is effective or not, but it's just something I started doing. I'll say, one, relaxation is beginning to double. Two, relaxation is doubling more and more. Three, relaxation is doubling throughout your body. So I'm slowing down.
That's fine.
That's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's congruent with what you're suggesting.
Well, no, I saw you fire through it.
Well, that's just because I was just reading through it real quick. I already made the statement that what you do has to be congruent with what you're suggesting. So I wouldn't go, one, relaxation is going to, I'm just reading through it. Okay, here's another one, script for the numerically challenged. This is not for stupid people. It's for accountants.
Where is it?
Okay, on page 37, 137, excuse me, 137. The script for the Elmer Banyan for the rapid induction for numerically challenged. And these are, this is for people who typically have difficulty losing the numbers. And they are numbers people, scientists, accountants, people who make their living with numbers. They don't want to lose no stinking numbers. It's important. However, mathematical types understand something, and it's called special sets of numbers. If you've had education in mathematics, you know that you can make special sets that have special properties. You can do stuff with those numbers, but you're not screwing with the rest of the numbers. Now, there's things called like irrational numbers and all this kind of stuff. So it's exactly the same thing, except the underlined part. The bottom, it says, but I'd like, you know, okay, so we've just led up to the point where we say, really allow your mind to relax, like your body's relaxed. In the moment, I'm going to have you slowly and softly begin to count out, like starting with the number one. Then we insert, but I would like you to let it be different from every other time that you've ever counted, because this is a special set of numbers, okay, that fade away to nothing. That's what these numbers do. See, so they can do that with these numbers. It doesn't mess with the rest of the numbers. I've also found that this is useful for actors. Actors, one of the last things they ever want to do is what?
Forget their lines.
So we say, this is a special set of numbers. This is what they do. They fade away. Okay. So you're the director, and you kind of say, okay, action, and they fade away. And that's what's going on.
Can you just use that script for anybody? Because
you could. But I don't like adding stuff just in general, unless, because really it's this very small portion of the population. And so if I was to do a session with John as an accountant, I would just throw that in because it's prophylactic. Okay. Then also after that, there's the script for the short version of the element induction. Don't use this yet. I'll tell you when to use it. But let me tell you in generalities when you would use that. If you haven't got instant inductions down yet, but you're getting sick and tired of doing the whole element, you may use the short element on a second, third, or fourth session, not a first session, because it refers to what you accomplished in the first session. Okay, so it starts off, take a nice deep breath, hold it, let it out, close your eyes. I'd like you to take attention to your eyelids. You can relax your eyelids so much they just won't work once you've surely done that. Hold on to relaxation, not testing to make sure that they won't work. I can say test because they've already passed this test, so it's a little bit different. Good. Stop testing and go deeper, relaxed. Now send that feeling of relaxation down to your head, the top of your head, to the bottom of your feet. Sounds pretty much the same. I'm going to do a check to make sure you've been following my instructions. I'm going to lift your arm and drop it. Don't help me lift it. That would remove the relaxation. Just let it be limp and relaxed. Boom. Do that part. Now, let your body relax as if the lights were out and you were asleep at night. Okay? Let your mind relax as if the numbers had faded away to nothing, nothing, nothing. So I'm saying, go back to where we were last week when you lost the numbers. This would not make sense on a first session. It makes sense to the hypnotized client in a second session. Let your mind relax as if the numbers had faded away to nothing, nothing, nothing. Okay.
So how do you know that they've achieved that level if they're not doing the numbers, using the numbers thing?
We're going to do what we're going to do in the second session. We're going to start doing these insight techniques and stuff. If you have any reason at all to believe that they're not in somnambulism, then just have them lose the numbers or do the eye fractionation deepening covert test. Okay? That's fine. But this is what people do. They go back to wherever they were before or deeper. So if you help them get somnambulism, man, they're going to, that's where they're going. Okay. But if you have any indication that they're not there, just you can do the numbers, losing the numbers, or you can do the eye fractionation deepening covert test.
What do you look for? Something that would say they're not there.
Well, if they're arguing with me, you know, they go.
That would be
obvious. They go. And plus what I'm going to do in this session, I'm going to do affect bridge age aggression. And what you're going to find out is when I start bringing up that emotion, it deepens whatever level of trance they are. And then I will get that. Then I will get the age aggression. People are really ignorant about hypnosis, and that is you think that if you get somebody upset, they're going to emerge. It's just the opposite. You get them upset, and it deepens them. So we're going to say, we're going to do this. Let the numbers fade away. Let your mind relax as if it fade away in nothing. Now take your attention to your breathing, and just let each gentle breath that you exhale take you deeper, as if each breath was a step down a staircase of relaxation. Every breath takes you deeper. Every sound takes you deeper. Every sensation takes you deeper. Following my suggestion certainly takes you deeper. And now your attention goes to a feeling inside you you don't like. It has everything to do with why you came here today. And as I start to count from 1 to 5, it comes up strong and as powerful as it's ever been. 1! And then what happens? They're going to start responding to that or not. And I'm going to start seeing the face turn red, the heart beating in their chest. And guess what? I got them. Okay, I got them. And so once I get them in an emotional state, I really don't care what level of hypnosis they're in because they're going to age regress. The reason we get somnambulism is so that they'll age regress. But if I can get them in a sufficiently emotional state, they will age regress. Okay? And that's what the air induction that I will be demonstrating to you later on is. Just get somebody really upset, whack them on them and say, follow that feeling back. Boom. And they'll instantly go into the exact level of hypnosis they need to have that experience.
You mean it?
I mean it. I know it.
I do. Actually, why?
Yeah. Sure.
Shark your clock.
Don't do your wife. So.
I don't whack them too hard. I whack them a little bit. Enough to startle them. Startles them. Fall that thing back. They go back. Yes.
What do you take for DRM after the first micros instead of after all?
No sense in proceeding unless they follow that instruction. I don't have compliance. Or they're not able to. As soon as I get the eye relaxation, I say, what do I want to do? Why do I do the eye relaxation part? To see if they can relax part of their body. Why do I do that? So that they have a model for relaxing the rest of their body. So the next thing I do, first I check to see if they can get the relaxation in their eyelids. Then once that's done, I say, okay, good, send that feeling through your entire body. Now I need to test if they've done that. Once they've done that, then I can move on. I've tested to see if they can do that.
Yes, they do this 2 more times, they relax their body more, so they can...
No need for it. All I'm doing is testing. I've already tested. I don't need to keep testing it. You can...
No, I mean, just keep at the end.
No. I don't want to proceed with a technique unless I know it's used, that they're able to do it. I don't want to go through that, okay, send that feeling all the way down through your body without being by your feet. Good, let's do that again. Take your attention to your eyelids, relax your eyelids, test to make sure they won't work. Now send it all the way down, across your body, 10 times deeper, relaxed. Good, let's do that again. Take your attention to your eyelids, just like before, relax them. Now send it all the way down, across your body, as if you could double the relaxation, and then test. Now I've spent all that time using the relaxation when it might not have existed. I want to make sure that they're able to do that before I go through that 3 times. That's why... Measure twice, cut once. He said, I'm not going to proceed with those other techniques unless I've measured the relaxation so that I can use it.
And the other question is, why don't you make them open their eyes and close instead of...
Oh, yeah, in the original Ellman, he uses an eye fractionation technique. And I completely got rid of that, and there's a very good reason for it. The original Ellman goes like this. Take a look at my hand, take a nice deep breath, exhale, close your eyes. You know, you relax your eyelids so much they just won't work. Once you're sure that you're done, I give them a test to make sure they won't work. Good. Stop testing. Take that feeling of relaxation at the top of your head, send it down across your entire body from the top head to the bottom feet. Moment I'm going to do a check, lift your arm and drop it. Good. Now what I want you to do is open your eyes, close your eyes, and go deeper. 10 times deeper. Good. Now let's do that again. Open your eyes, close your eyes, and go 2 times deeper. The problem with that approach is it confused people later on when I did eye-lock test. Wait a minute, before you were telling me to open my eyes. First you told me I could open my eyes, and now you tell me I can open my eyes, and now you're telling me try but I cannot, and they got confused. And it decreased the reliability of the eye-lock convincer. And so I said, forget it, I'm going to get rid of it. And I completely got rid of it. And then because we always do an eye-lock test on every first session. It's so important. And so I got rid of the eye fractionation part. And as a result, I rely more on the losing the numbers part for the deepening. Okay. So that's why that was done. It became more reliable.
Not the only covert test you do.
There's only two covert tests.
But you don't do that one. Isn't that the other one? Isn't it the open eyes?
No, that's not a covert test.
Right.
You'd know if your eyes opened or not, right?
But I thought there was one where you counted the three and you did it different rhythms and you messed up the rhythm. If they opened it up before you said three, that was the...
That's right. It's in there. You read about it.
So do you use that at all then?
I use it whenever, like in a subsequent session. Like, for example, if something comes up in a session, like they suddenly got to go pee. Okay, I'll say, open your eyes. I see you, John. I'll get to you in a moment. They'll say, I got to pee. I say, okay, in a moment, count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, you'll get up out of the chair. You will go to the restroom. You will take care of that. You'll come back to the chair and go back into hypnosis. 1, 2, 3, go. Okay, and I didn't emerge them. Right, so you can open your eyes and you're going to go. And then they come back. They might not be in somnambulism when they get back. They're probably still in hypnosis. Okay? And then they get back in the chair. I say, good, go deeper. And then I will do the eye fractionation deepening technique. In a moment, count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3 and not before, open your eyes. And I'll lightly snap my fingers like this. That'll be your signal to instantly close your eyes and go deeper. 1, 2, 3. Deeper. And I will do that to make sure they're back in somnambulism. John?
When you demonstrated this induction
system, it's from who? Okay.
You can see you rock a woman with a shoulder touch. When was the appropriate moment for that
motion? Anytime I want to deepen. But in the numbers part, I do it to interrupt the counting.
Okay.
Can I buy you just for a minute again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have a question, Josh.
Okay. Ladies first. What's your question?
When you were hypnotizing me and you said go deeper, and I felt that some pressure.
Slight pressure down.
Mm-hmm. That was effective.
Deeper. That's mm-hmm. right.
So,
I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but what I'm doing is when I'm doing a lot of little stuff that if I told you everything I was doing, I'd drive you nuts. But one of the things I do is I count in time with her breathing. As soon as the breath fills up her lungs, I say 1, and then there's going to be a relaxation response when we exhale, and I time my counting with that. But I also time my rocking. And deep. And what happens through conditioning is she begins to associate, through Pavlovian conditioning, her natural relaxation response of her breathing with the pressing on the shoulder. Okay. Would you like to do hypnosis with me now?
Sure.
Okay. We should wait until she gets back. I'll just wait. Anybody got any questions while we're waiting?
In the prepared script that we're planning on doing, there's no post-hypnotic suggestions and there's no emerge, so we just do the one-liner, 1-3 emerge?
Yes. In a moment, count from 1-3. When I get to 3, I'm going to open your eyes and emerge. 1, 2, 3. And you do feel good, don't you? Okay. Look at me. Sleep.
Deeper. Down.
As I gently rock you, just let yourself go deeper and deeper. Relax. Good. Beautiful. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1-3. And with each number, you'll go deeper. Here we go. 1, deeper and deeper. 2, deeper and deeper. 3, way down. Now, in a moment, I'm going to touch you on your back and press on your forehead. And as I do, you'll be able to stand up straight. But you'll go deeper into hypnosis. Here we go. Standing up deeper, 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 deeper. There you go. You'll be able to stand right there very comfortably, going deeper with every breath. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1-3. When I get to 3 and not before, I'd like you to open your eyes. And then I will lightly snap my fingers like this. And that'll be your signal to instantly close your eyes and go deeper. If that's okay with you, nod your head. Good. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Notice how good that feels. We're going to do that a few more times. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. And deeper. 1, 2, 3. And deeper. We're going to do that a few more times. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, relax. The sound of my voice, the touch of my hand, and the very act of breathing helps to guide you deeper. Because you had this experience, you're going to be more confident than ever before in doing hypnosis for yourself or others. The idea of doing long, progressive relaxations are completely out of the question for you. Such a silly thought in the first place. And you're going to really be a believer in testing. You really understand now, because you're a true believer, that people really can very quickly reach these deep levels of hypnosis, be tested, and then make major changes in their life. And so now, slowly at your own rate, emerge. And we're good friends now, aren't we? Good. Thank you very much. Good.
Thank you.
So in that test, what do you do? 1, 2, 3. Opens her eye. You couldn't. Don't go back and do it. She's going.
Never like a golden again.
Here's the threat.
And I go deeper. Now I start off really slow. And then I speed up. 1, 2, 3. Deeper. 1, 2, 3. Deeper. And what will happen after just doing that 2 or 3 times, normal waking consciousness will begin to anticipate the 3. Okay? So when I go 1, 2, they would open their eyes on 3 even though I didn't say it. But in somnambulism, you have a state of mind that the hypnotist calls contention. And that they're hanging on every single word. You said open my eyes on 3. You didn't say 3 yet. I'm not going to open my eyes. You see? So they come almost in this mechanical way of thinking. 1, 2, and I didn't hear 3, so I don't open my eyes. But the person who's not achieved that level of hypnosis will anticipate 3 and open their eyes. And so that is a valid test for the threshold of somnambulism, at least.
Your eyes were really fluttery. Is that common?
Common. But from my experience, it doesn't really indicate any specific level of hypnosis.
And her eyes opened every time you had them open and closed. Were they getting closed?
Well, at first I couldn't see, so I had to kind of...
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But otherwise, every time I said three, they open.
Do they keep opening less and less as they go, as you keep going down, where you're just kind of like barely opening your eyes, or you barely open as you keep
going? Well, what happened is I say three, and they would start to open, and then if I gave her more and more time, they would continue to go open. But as soon as I saw that they were open, good, deeper. One, two, three. Deeper. One, two. No anticipation of three. Good. Three. Go deeper. I've got to give her the three. I promised it to her, right? Or she'll be in that constant waiting for three kind of state. Yeah. Good. Anything you want to share about that experience, Sip?
To address the question?
Yeah.
It was hard to open my eyes. But it opened slowly.
My feeling with what would be is like, pretty soon it's like, all right, I got it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care.
I know.
I don't care if you're bothered. It's just temporary, you know. And I'd say, if they stop opening their eyes, I'll say, listen, you got to follow my instructions. When I count to three and knock before, and I got her permission, I had her nod her head, right?
Yeah.
I said, you agreed to open your eyes on three. I want you to do that for me. One, two, three. Opening. I'll get them doing it. I'm kind of a pain in the butt. But, you know. I'm not worried about the little things. I'm worried about the big things. I'm going to help this person change their life. I don't care if they're a little bit bothered at least for the moment. I'm going to bother them a hell of a lot more than that during the process.
You may have covered this when I was in the bathroom, but why did you choose to do it standing up? Just to show that it could show up?
Absolute pure laziness.
Yeah, okay.
I'd not go get the chairs again. I do a lot of demonstrations standing up. I didn't even think about it. I just did it standing up. Also, I thought it would probably be easier for you guys to see her eyes if she was up here instead of down there, but forget that plan. She was
I don't understand. Is it the protective mechanism in both the conscious mind and the subconscious mind that keeps her legs from buckling over?
Yep. Now, they start... You know what I will usually do? I was in kind of a hurry there. Is I'll usually say, when they're standing up, I'll say, no matter how deeply relaxed, you'll always be able to stand, okay? And they say, okay. But if they start to buckle, I'll just say, stand up. I mean, they're supposed to be suggestible, right? So they should be able to stand up. I had this one guy from East Germany. You know, I told you about East Germans. He was a psychologist. And he flew all the way over because he wanted to be hypnotized by me. He says, East Germany, well, now it's Germany. He says, they don't teach these things. I want to experience deep hypnosis. So I thought, okay, here it is, probably about the worst possible subject I could have. So I said, look, I know you think you know all about hypnosis. Watch my pre-talk video. He did that. Brought him in. Any questions about that? And then I did this. Took him off. We didn't go to the big chair. We went to the big floor. And I said, we're going to do this starting standing up. And I purposefully did not give him the suggestion that he's going to be able to stand. And standing, I went, press on my hand, close your eyes, sleep, and let him fall on the ground. Because I wanted him to be condensed. It's a condenser.
Can we put that down as three?
So I went, press on my hand, close your eyes, sleep, and we went, boom, right down on the floor. And then I went, I'm rocking his head, and I said, next time you do hypnosis with me or anyone you trust, you're going to be able to go in more quickly, more deeper than the time before. That's right. Whenever you do hypnosis with me or anyone you trust, you'll be able to go in more deep than the time before. In a moment, count one to three. When I get to three, you're going to fully emerge. One, two, three. And I merged him with his nose that far off the carpet.
Wow.
He's like, whoa. I said, good, stand up. Let's do it again. For nature, human beings do better with practice. Press my mind, close your eyes, sleep. Back down there. We did that three times. I said, good, let's go to the big chair. Everyone goes to go deep hypnosis. We put him in the chair, go, you know the rule. Press my mind, close your eyes, sleep. And then I did an age regression on him, back to a pleasant time as a childhood. He claimed before the session he had no childhood memories. Even if he did, there was no positive time. And in just a few seconds, I had him back, jumping off his dresser onto his bed, playing dive bomber or something with his brother, having a wonderful time, you know. And I opened up all those memories of happy times in childhood and emerged him with a suggestion that he could even have more positive memories about pleasant times in childhood. There's no way in the world I was going to let this German guy fly all the way over from Germany and have a session with me without me kicking his ass. I mean, without him having a positive and compelling hypnosis experience. Now, there's a lesson in this. The more difficult the client appears to be, the more likely I am to use an instant induction. Because there's just simply less time for anything to go wrong. Okay? You start doing an induction that takes 2 minutes, all kinds of shit can go wrong in 2 minutes. But if the present moment, close your eyes, sleep, boom, you're on the floor. You've done the induction, the deepening, and the convincer all in about 5 seconds. Then what I did is I emerged him, did not give him time enough to fully emerge. It takes about 30 to 60 seconds to fully emerge from hypnosis. Instantly slammed him back into hypnosis. That's called what?
Compounding?
Pyramiding? Fractionation. He's doing all those three things at once. Did it three times in a row. Then I took him to the big chair. Okay? So he didn't have a chance. But there was just no way in the world I was going to let him fly all the way over from Germany and not be successful. So I was a little bit rough. Yeah.
Has anyone else ever felt
I'm sure it happens from time to time, but when I do demonstrations up here standing, I purposefully pick people that I could carry. Yeah. I pick a little gal from the front row. Because if she starts to fall out of the chair, I can pull her back up in the chair. If she starts to fall here, I can stop her. I'm not going to take somebody like Mitch, who's taller than me, that maybe I could, you know, just lose physical control over. So, because what? Priority is the safety of the people we're working with. Okay. So now... We're about to begin practice time on each other. There's this old saying, practice makes perfect. What a load of crap.
Practice the wrong stuff.
Yeah, you can practice it wrong. Practice does not make perfect. It makes what? Permanent. So if you practice it wrong, it just gets harder and harder to do it right. Now guess what? When you're first starting off, there's probably almost a higher probability that you do it wrong, you do it right. So practice could be counterproductive. So how does one get better? And in every workshop I've ever been, we actually practiced something, they did it in the absolute worst possible way that you could ever do it. They'd say, okay, you hypnotize this person, and then you hypnotize this person, and you that's wrong. That's the worst possible thing. What the hell do you do? Okay. Anyone ever heard of Richard Marcinko? Richard Marcinko is an interesting fellow. He started off as a frogman in the Navy, an enlisted man. He actually became an officer, and he was one of the most instrumental people to put together the SEALs teams for the Navy, which was developed in the Vietnam War. And what he came up with this philosophy, the more you sweat in practice, the less you bleed in war, and sometimes the more you bleed in practice, the less you die in war. Yes. The philosophy is that the more realistic the practice, the more valuable it is. You can't have people practice shooting little paper silhouettes and expect them to do good when the enemy doesn't stand there like this on the battlefield. He did this research. He took a whole bunch of people that wanted to be SEALs, took about 20 guys, gave them each 20 rounds of ammunition, and said, look, this tank is going to pull this car across this field about 50 yards in front of you. It's only going to be there. It's not going to be fast. It's going to be like 25 miles an hour. About how fast someone would go down a country road in, you know, more time or with 20 miles an hour. And I want you to shoot the hell out of that thing. Now, 20 people times 20 rounds, how many is that? 400 rounds of ammunition. So then, go! Bam, 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 bam. Because all the training they had had up that time was a silhouette. And then you get to go, boom. Okay? You know, that opportunity doesn't come along very often in real war. Especially in Vietnam, where they're hiding behind the bushes and all that kind of stuff. Kind of like when we did it back in the Revolutionary War. Okay? So he says, if we're going to be successful, if you guys are going to survive, and if we're going to win anything, we got to start doing practice that is a lot more like what we're going to be trying to do. So, what the hell is Cal talking about? What's got to do with hypnosis? There's some things I'm going to have you do that, because when you leave here, you're going to be out on your own, it's going to help you survive as a hypnotherapist, okay? Every session that you do with each other, practicing, will start off the following. Would you like to do hypnosis with me now? Is it okay if I touch your hand, your arm, your shoulder, maybe even your forehead? This is called drill. See, my first job as a teacher was...
drill instructor.
I was, security training NCO for security police. And they taught me the difference between education and training. Up until now, it's been education. You're about to get some training. And the military understands training. Because what happens is you get in this situation where you don't have time to think. You got to react. The shit hits the fan. And you need to be able to do stuff without thinking about it very much. And if we don't drill, then you'll have to think about every single little thing. So what I want you to do is every single session you say, would you like to do hypnosis with me now? In the beginning, you have to think about it, but pretty soon it just becomes automatic. Would you like to do hypnosis with me now? Is it okay if I touch your hand, your arm, your shoulder, maybe even your forehead? Good. Take a nice deep breath, exhale, close your eyes. See, it just becomes automatic. And with that, you get confidence. It becomes smooth. Now, guess what? You're not going to do it right the first time. So here's the practice and perfect and stuff thing. If you did that, it takes 2 or 3 minutes to get through that induction, and then the other person does it, all of a sudden you forget everything you learned from having done it. Because as soon as you get done, you go, oh, I wish I would have done this, and I should have done this a little bit better, but then you don't get the opportunity to do it again, because now you get hypnotized. That's the worst possible situation, because you lose the benefit of the practice. So what we're going to do is you do it 3 times. Because you go, would you like to do hypnosis with me now? Yes, go take it. Is it okay if I touch your hand, your arm, your shoulder, maybe even your forehead? Good. Take a nice deep breath. Exhale, close your eyes. Blah, 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 blah. I count from 1 to 3 and you'll emerge. 1, 2, 3. And you do feel good, don't you? Boy. Okay, let's do it again. You do it right away. Why? Because right away you'll think, oh, I should have done this better, I should have done that better. And now we have the maximum opportunity, the training opportunity, to now do it again better than you did it. And then as soon as you do that, you do it again. Okay? This is what they do in the military. Do it again! Do it again! Do it again! That was wrong. Do it again, do it right. Because you got to have the experience of doing it better each time. That's the only way that practice will make perfect. Got it? 3 times. Then change. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you something important. All that was important, but this is really important. We practice until 6:30 here. Then you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Okay? You can continue to go somewhere else and practice if you want. But I did not tell you to do it 3 times. And then the other person do it 3 times, and then go home. You do it 3 times, then you trade, and you do it 3 times, then you trade, and you do it 3 times, and you trade, and you do it 3 times, and you trade, and you do it 3 times, and you trade, and you do it 3 times, and you trade, and you do it 3 times, and you trade, and you do it 3 times, until your time is up. Because if one of you says, I did it my three times, I'm going home. You ain't seen a dirty look. Okay, you don't do it three times and go home. You do it three times and you trade. You do it three times and you trade. You do it three times and you trade. And what I'd like you to do is to break up into groups of twos and threes. My office is available. Maybe Mark's office is available. Probably the audio-video room is available. The two cubby holes there are available. Outside is available. And you do it three times and you trade. Three times you trade until 6:30. At 6:30, you are excused. And then, don't go. Not yet. Tomorrow we start at 8. We get together, you do it three times. Three times, three times, three times, three times, three times. And then tomorrow, when I say any questions I haven't covered so far, you're going to have lots of questions. And I'm not going to hover you over you on this. Mark's going to be moving around from person to person. The tendency of when I go, then you forget everything. I'll start hanging around you guys a little bit more, you know, as the days get on, you're more confident.
Do you want us to trade people or do it with the same person?
No, like let's say you guys did. Yep. Today, I want you to stick with the same person. Tomorrow, if there's a person available, do it with someone. You want to do it with as many people as you can because that builds your confidence and also everybody responds a bit differently. So you'll build experience. Any other questions? 8 until 9 o'clock tomorrow. We'll do the same thing. Begin.
You want her?
Okay. Okay.
Do these guys have any questions?
I want to bring
you here.
I just have to use the restroom.
No, we're finding.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Okay.
What? I don't know. We have even numbers or what?
Numbers 1, 2, 3.
Nice and not bad. Good. Right. John, you got harder?
Yeah, but you're just going to be betrayal or something.
Okay.
Let's do it. Come on, look around.
Okay. Next one.
All these guys in class have something to work with. But every night, you are. Now, tomorrow, I will be interacting with you guys this time of
week.
So I'm watching you practice this week. Do you have any questions?
You
have a
partner? Yes, and I think you do.
Do you have a partner? No, not yet.
We'll be free.
Okay.
And what we'll do, a little bit more into that, is... Take
all the
rooms
you're taking.
Call you up on cell phone, and I'll call you. And I can watch you and make some comments on what we do. So make sure that John has a phone number that I can call you at when you practice. Any questions? Good. Okay. Practice, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9, right? And you guys need to ask more questions, you guys that are on the internet. Okay? This is for you every bit as much as it is for them. Okay? In fact, you guys are my good project. You were special to me because, you know, gosh, this is like Star Trek. Okay, guys, so I'll see you tomorrow and we'll get more serious about it. Give me a practice. Well, they don't switch off of it. So just keep practicing. Over and over to yourself. At least a half hour. Because they don't have to switch off. Half hour straight.
Thanks. Need it.
Okay, then I'll go in.